wait for the roll.
Good evening and welcome to the Aurora Grandy City Council meeting for Tuesday, January 27th, 2015. May I have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Guthrie?
Here.
Councilmember Brown?
Indeed.
Councilmember Harmon?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge?
Here.
And Mayor Hill?
Here. Tonight, our flag salute is going to be led by the Rotary Club of Aurora Grandy, and we have...
Please stand. We're going to pledge our allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. Military men can salute. The rest of us, hand over your hearts. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Lenny. Did you want to comment about Rotary Club actions going on?
I didn't know if you're going to move to your moment of silence right away. So we're the Roy Grandy Rotary Club. Normally, I'd say we're the number one service club in town. Normally, I would say that. We're one of the best clubs in town. We were formed in 1945. We put the Rotary Bandstand in the park across the street. We also do the Rotary Fish Fry every Harvest Festival. We do the Rotary Relays at the high school, which is the junior highs, and the high schools get together and compete against each other. And we also do the Christmas sing-along at the Clark Center in December. This year our fundraiser is we're going to raffle off a Harley Davidson. So pay attention to the tickets. I think tickets going to be $20, and someone's going to get a brand new Harley. And also, it's, in case you didn't know, it's the custom of every city to have their city manager be part of that city's Rotary Club. Grover Beach city manager belongs to the Grover Beach Rotary Club. Pismo Beach city manager belongs to the Pismo Beach Rotary Club. And from what I hear, you might be hiring a new city manager, and we invite him to attend our club. Thank you.
Thank you, Lenny. Okay, we'll start the meeting then with a moment of reflection. Thank you. Our agenda review, we have no closed session announcements. Can we move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and further readings be waived?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries unanimously. Tonight we have a special presentation celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Rio Grande Valley Kiwanis International and recognizing the Rio Grande Kiwanis Club for its service. This is Ann McCracken is here. Thank you. Hopefully this is working well. This is an honorary proclamation celebrating the 100th anniversary of Kiwanis International and recognizing the Aurora Grandy Valley Kiwanis Club for its service to the city. Whereas Kiwanis International is one of the largest service organizations in the world with more than 600,000 members of all ages and abilities in more than 80 nations. Whereas in addition to improving lives, Kiwanis members promote the development of community leaders, positive role models, intercultural understanding and cooperation, and opportunities for fellowship, personal growth, professional development, and community service. And whereas the first Kiwanis Club started its service in Detroit, Michigan, USA, in 1915, and Kiwanis International celebrates the centennial anniversary of its founding. And whereas the service provided by the Kiwanis Club of Arroyo Grande Valley will continue to have a positive impact on our community and citizens, now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Jim Hill, Mayor of the City of Arroyo Grande, on behalf of the entire City Council, do hereby recognize and celebrate the 100th anniversary of Kiwanis International and encourage the citizens of Arroyo Grande to render support to the members of this organization and to make themselves aware of Kiwanis International, whose members are providing meaningful service to our homes, schools, and community. And we've signed the proclamation today. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Or two regarding mayors and former mayors and members of service organizations.
There we go.
Thank you very much. We have one right here.
What?
Let me hand this to you, Mr. Right. Pete Dougal, former mayor of Arroyo Grande. Thank you very much. And we encourage you to check out all the great service organizations in your community. We do wonderful works, and we continue. And it's just a matter of personality and who you choose to hang your hat with. So come see our meeting. We meet every Thursday morning at 7 o'clock at the quarter deck. Come and have a good breakfast, and we'll even buy it for you. Pete will.
Thank you.
In deference to Lenny, the Lions think of the projects, the Rotary funds the projects, and the Kiwanis do the work.
And real quickly, just a hint of things to come. Elm Street Park has a playground that's falling apart, and we would like to adopt that as our centennial project, Rio Grande Valley Kiwanis Club. So keep that in mind. We're moving forward with that and with the city and with our club members, and we'll be seeking your help and advice in the future on that. It'll be an all-access playground, ADA compliant, and we need it so desperately. Thank you very much.
Next item is our presentation of our comprehensive annual financial report by our auditor, Mosslevy and Hartzheim. Our representative tonight.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Alexander Hom from Mosslevy and Hartzheim. And first off, I'd like to present to you the 13-14 audit. We gave the City of Arroyo Grande a modified clean opinion. And what a modified clean opinion means is two things. One, it follows the generally accepted accounting principles of the United States. So that means you guys followed all the accounting rules perfectly. And second, there were no material misstatements or material weaknesses in the finances. So meaning in terms of what material means is pretty much significant. And what we view as significant is pretty much the level of risk. Before we go into the audit, we usually interview staff, we look at controls, we look at processes, and we view what types of risk are involved with the audit. What could go wrong in the audit? And from there, we use a formula based on past year numbers, past year revenues, past year assets, and we use that to determine a level of materiality. And from there, we go about the audit, and if anything that reaches above that materiality level, that's what we consider a material misstatement or material weakness. And fortunately, we did not find any for the 13-14 fiscal year. However, there are little things that we found, and one of them stood out, and it involved the Parks and Rec Department, and involved mainly the Children Motion Program. And how it worked was, it's a child care program, so parents come in and pay, and they get written a receipt. And from there, it gets bunched together and deposited into with the finance department. What we found was that when they bashed it in, they didn't kind of make a log of it or anything where you can track the one individual receipt to the deposit. So we recommended to them to fix that, and I believe as of today, I think it was completely fixed. Now, the financial highlights for the 13-14 year, from the looks of it, it was very healthy. Consecutive years of the general fund growing. This year especially, there was an increase for unassigned fund balance in the general fund of about a little over $1 million. And unassigned fund balance means is that the city could pretty much suspend. It's not committed to anything. It's just $1 million in reserve, pretty much. And in combination with the committed for economic stabilization, pretty much the reserve can cover about 28% of the total general fund expenditures for the year. So that's very healthy. Let's see. I believe you guys had, the city had a goal of 20%, so you guys exceeded that immensely. Also, total revenue in the general fund increased about nearly $1 million, and that's mainly due to, I believe, increases in sales tax and property taxes, but both combined about $800,000. Also, the general fund received more than actually anticipated, about nearly $480,000, and the city spent about was under budget about $480,000 in terms of expenditures. So that was very good. Major changes in the audit for the year was mainly the sewer fund changed from a governmental fund to an enterprise fund. So if you look on page, let's see. B19, in the statement activities, there's a transfer of nearly $23 million, and that's mainly just between the funds because it made a switch from governmental to business type. Overall, cash flows for the enterprise funds consistent with the year and increases throughout each fund. And also, since the switchover for the sewer fund, you got, of course, assets increased too. Because from a governmental fund, you don't show fixed assets. In a business type, enterprise type fund, you do. So that's why you see the increase in the sewer fund by $23 million. And are there any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a couple brief questions, one specific and one general, and that is we have currently $17 million in unfunded total pension liabilities. What's your experience with that as a percentage of our overall budget, and what would you anticipate how that would be going forward, or can you comment on that?
Especially with pensions, I can't. If I could tell you the future, I wish I could. I can't.
Do you see that $17 million as unfunded total pension liabilities normal for a city of this size?
I've mainly dealt with a lot of small cities, so I can't really answer that for you.
Say that again. I'm sorry. I'm
sorry. I mainly deal with very small cities or school districts. So I can't really answer that for you at the moment, but I believe
we can.
Well, if you don't have the answer, that's fine. I don't want to. I'm not trying to put you on the hot seat. I just figured, since you might have that information, I'm just trying to get your experience on that.
Okay. I can't. I don't know the answers.
Okay. That's all, Mr. Mayor.
Kristen, Jim. Was there a particular focus of the audit this year, or general?
Just general financial.
General financial.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to thank the staff, the entire finance and I had to work with all the other departments too, like Parks and Rec, PD. All your staff was incredibly friendly, and especially Ryan, he helped us out. He makes our life extremely easy. So, be thankful that you have Ryan.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your work.
Right. Have a good night.
Okay, brings us to community comments and suggestions. Any member of the public may address the council on items that are not on the agenda tonight. For the items that are on the agenda, we'll have an opportunity to comment before each of those items come on the agenda. The council can make brief comments or ask questions for clarity, but this is basically a time for you to tell us what's on your mind. And rather than engage in a dialogue, so we would like to listen to what you have to say.
Good evening. My name is Randy Wimet. I'm resident at 327 Noguera Place here in the city. And the item I have is not on the agenda, and that's thoughts and prayers. Because you five elected officials have so much responsibility and pressures on your shoulders, I want you to know that you are supported and you're lifted up in our thoughts, in our prayers, not only by my wife and me in our home, but also by the nearly 500 people of our congregation here in the city, to which I'm the pastor. We lift you up for the pressure that you have as public servants. A majority of our members do live here in the city. As you consider tonight this agenda and the sensitive negotiations, please receive our encouragement through this prayer. Almighty and loving Heavenly Father, we call upon your Holy Spirit for peace, your light for clarity, your Savior Son for strength. Lord of life, unite our council and community with caring hearts and renewed respect, that it may begin tonight. Help us to see that we are one family in community. Help us to speak the truth in love. In your holy and precious name we pray. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the council? We're quiet this evening. Fred.
Fred Collins, Tribal Administrator, Northern Chumash Tribal Council. I want to thank Mayor Pro Temp, City Council members, staff for the opportunity to speak today. The Northern Chumash Tribal Council is a state-recognized tribal government located in San Luis Obispo, 67 South Street. We're formed under Senate Bill 18, and we are involved in all land use issues in San Luis Obispo County and all of the cities. We comment on CEQA projects, environmental projects, cultural resource projects. Our goal in San Luis Obispo County is to protect our culture, to protect our heritage, to protect our sacred sites. I'm here today to focus your attention on a community-wide grassroots effort that we're involved in. And the Northern Chumash Tribal Council is looking forward to engaging you folks in this project as supporters. This project started almost 20 years ago. In 1990, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, opened up the designation project prospect for marine sanctuary along our coast here. And there were many folks from our community that got involved in this effort. Underneath the Marine Sanctuary Act, which can be found on www.marinesanctuaryact.gov. It gives you all the basis for the marine sanctuaries. There are three different ways that a marine sanctuary can be brought into life, and one of them is through executive order by the president. The other one is by a legislative process, which goes through the Congress, legislator. And a third is by administrative process by NOAA. And this is the first time that NOAA has undertaken the administrative process of designation for a marine sanctuary. And this process is a little bit different, or actually it's quite different from the ones that have been in the past. And NOAA is focusing on a grassroots effort, a community-run marine sanctuary. And this will be decided by the administration at NOAA. So for the last 2 years, the Northern Chumash Tribal Council has been joining forces with Surfrider, Sierra Club, Ocean Alliance, and different groups all over San Luis Obispo County, Santa Barbara County, and all over the world. We have gotten supporters all the way over to the Samoa Islands, the Kingdom of Atui in Hawaii. And so now we're at the stage where we're going to file our designation document. And that designation document will be being filed with NOAA on February 2nd. And as we go through this process, what will happen is the designation document goes to NOAA and you get on a list. And this list is one where NOAA looks over and makes sure that your criteria meets their criteria. And during this process, the support mechanism behind the scenes from the community continues on. And so we continue to add letters of support from our different government agencies, entities, our different cities, different businesses and people. So this is an ongoing process. It's not just something that stops with the submitting of the document. So this will go move forward, and if we meet all the criteria, which we believe we do, we've had great relationship with NOAA through this process. NOAA has consulted with us, given us guidance through the entire project. So we have had excellent guidance in making our document. Now, all of these documents can be found on our webpage, which is www.chumashsanctuary.com. And you can see letters there from different supporters. You can see lists of businesses. You can see lists of individuals. Most recently, we received a letter of support from Dr. Charles Lester of the Coastal Commission. And we're receiving support from many, many different agencies. We have Supervisor Gibson has sent us a letter of support. I'm meeting with Frank Meacham here in a couple weeks to agendize this project on the Board of Supervisors calendar so that we can get their support. We're moving forward in a community-wide effort. It's been a real inspirational journey for me. You know, I thought I knew a lot about the oceans, and you have to understand, as a Chumash person, we look at our oceans a little bit differently. We look at the oceans through different lens than most folks. We see a great connectivity to all things. We see a connectivity with the ocean and the land and the people and all the animals and the microbial nations and all of the nations working together. And so for us to be able to preserve, we call her Grandmother Ocean, to preserve Grandmother Ocean in a good way so that my great-great-grandchildren and all of our great-great-grandchildren won't have to experience what my grandson does when we go to Santa Barbara. And we build our own tamal, and our tamal is our canoe, and we travel from Ventura to the Channel Islands every year in our own handmade tamal. And we practice down there in the harbor a lot. And I take my grandson down there, and he loves to skip rocks on the ocean. We compete all the time so you can get the furthest out. And, you know, when you walk along the ocean, all you see is these little round, flat pieces of oil. And people in Santa Barbara have learned to live with that. Little flat pieces of oil, that's what we throw. You know, and that happened from the spill, you know, many years ago down there with, you know, those platforms. So in our sanctuary, one of the things that we are not going to allow is oil platforms off of our coast. That is something that we believe could be incredibly harmful to the marine life and the life of Mother Ocean. 10,000 years ago, the end of our last ice age, the ocean was 300 feet lower and 3 to 6 miles out further, and my ancestors lived on those shorelines. So underneath, submerged in the water, there are many, many sacred places, and we would like to see them protected. So as a Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary, a lot of the things that we can do with our sanctuary involve protecting the small things, the things that have been forgotten. In our sanctuary, we've been discussing issues with the fishermen, issues with all of the different communities. Obviously, the fishing community has strong feelings about sanctuaries. In our sanctuary documents, we state very clearly that there will be no fishing regulations for commercial or recreational fishing. We've also been talking to the harbor folks. We're talking to Steve McGrath and Eric up in Morro Bay. And we will also not impose any regulations on harbor management. This is another issue that was big with the harbor folks, and that is written into our document that there will be no harbor management in our designation document. The last thing that we want to protect is the marine life, and we're not going to allow any seismic testing in our waters. Seismic testing of the magnitude that was proposed a year or so ago at 215 dB would kill or harm most of our marine life off our coast. We were able to get a 12-0 vote from the Coastal Commission to stop this insanity. So we're here to protect the marine life. We're here to make it better for our fishermen. And we want our communities involved in this marine sanctuary. We have the say as a community how we develop the marine sanctuary. We would like to see each city and each community play a big part in the management of the sanctuary. On our webpage, you'll find an economic report that shows $23 million will come into our county because of a marine sanctuary. A lot of research, $5 to $10 million in research funds will come to our schools. So we see it as a real benefit not only for the preservation, for the future generations of our wonderful ocean, and making it better and protecting it in the best way that we can. But we also see it a great opportunity to help our economy with our tourism and develop a project that can grow, one that we can make our community even better than it is now. I and my family have been walking this land for 18,000 years continuously. And we need to make some improvements. And we're here to help the communities stand shoulder to shoulder to make these things better for the future. So what I'm asking today is that you agendize this project on your agenda, and that we'll come back and give you a colored slide presentation with community members and community people who are on our team. And we hopefully will be able to get your support, a letter of support to NOAA, a letter of support to the Board of Supervisors, and a letter of support that will go along with our designation document. I want to thank you very much for listening and taking your time for us to present here tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment?
My name is Brad Snook. I'm the volunteer coordinator for our county's chapter of the Surfrider Foundation. I want to thank the council and staff for hearing Fred Collins' comments this evening. Our chapter has been actively involved in the in a movement to bring a National Marine Sanctuary to our county for some time. We are almost there. 1992 was the time when Monterey Bay got the sanctuary instead of us. We're very close. Right now, our county sits in between two National Marine Sanctuaries, Channel Islands and Monterey Bay. And we need to understand why. What is the value of not having a marine sanctuary when we're leaving so much on the table, so much value, so many things we can learn? The Northern Tribal Council is stepping up for us and telling us that there's a way to learn more about our county lands, the ocean that we get so much from every day. How can we get more? How can we learn more? So our activism and our time spent with Fred and the Chumash has been valuable to our chapter because it gives us something that we can't get anywhere else. I hope the city will write a letter in support of the sanctuary as Fred has requested, and I hope that we can move forward in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad. Is there other public comment? Okay. Hearing none, we'll move on to our consent items. These are scheduled for consideration as a group. First of all, would anyone like to consider any of these items separately?
8F, please.
8F. 8F is the appointments. Any others? Okay. Are there public comment on the consent items then, except item 8F? Hearing none.
I move approval of items 8A through 8H with the exception of 8F.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent items 8A through 8H with the exception of 8F. May I have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Harmon?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes. Passes unanimously. Item 8F, then, is consideration of council appointments to various city commissions and committees. Kelly, you have a report on that?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the City Council. Following each election year, the City Council makes appointments or reappointments to the various city commissions, boards, and committees pursuant to council policy. The policy states that the mayor and each council member shall recommend one representative to each of the respective city commissions, boards, and committees subject to approval by a majority of the City Council. On January 31st of 2015, there will be a number of city commission, committee, and board members whose terms will be expiring. Mayor Hill and council members Brown and Harmon have reviewed applications and submitted their recommendations for council consideration and approval. A list of the recommended appointments and or reappointments has been included in the staff report. In addition to these appointments, Councilmember Guthrie is recommending two new appointments to fill unscheduled vacancies that have occurred, one on the Traffic Commission and one on the Historical Resources Committee. And Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge is recommending one new appointment to fill an unscheduled vacancy on the Historical Resources Committee. That concludes my report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you very much. I thought that the council members could perhaps each introduce the names of their appointees, and then if those people are in the audience, that they could stand and so that we can identify them and get to know them. So, Councilmember Harmon, would you like to start?
Certainly. It's my pleasure to introduce I have several new appointments and two reappointments. For the Planning Commission, I'm pleased to appoint Terry Payne Fowler. Thank you, Ms. Payne. For the Parks and Recreation Committee, Jen Jensen. And I don't believe I see Jen in our audience this evening. For Traffic Commission, Ms. Jeanette Pell, and Jeanette is present. Thank you for your service, Jeanette. Downtown Parking Advisory Board, Noreen Vance. Thank you, Ms. Vance. For Architectural Review Committee, reappointment of Mr. Warren Hoag. And for the Historic Resources Committee, reappointment of Mr. Vincent Allen.
Thank you very much. Councilmember Brown.
Thank you so much. First of all, I need to thank Lisa Sparrow. She's probably not here tonight, but I want to thank her for her service. That's as important as introducing our new people. People that have served before deserve as much credit as the people that are going to serve. So, Lisa, you have my appreciation. Also, there's one change on my appointments. You'll see that Marcy Batita is listed. She called me today, and she is recommending someone else, and that person is Greg King, and I will be attempting to contact him and asking him to reserve on the commission as he has done before. Again, Marcy, I appreciate your service. So with that, my other people are Glenn Martin, if you're here, if you could stand up. Thank you for your time and willingness to serve. Also, I have Jim Carson, again, on the Traffic Commission. I don't know if you're here. And Carrie Ziegler. I know you. And Bruce Berlin. Boy, everybody's hiding out tonight. And then Bill Hart. I didn't see Bill, but I had a long conversation with him, and I really respect his service, and I'm looking forward to his being reappointed and what he can add to the mix. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
I have two vacancies to fill with two new appointments. First is Kenneth Price for the Traffic Commission. And then I'm sure no stranger to any of you, Chuck Fellows will be on the Historic Resources Commission. He was here. I guess he left. Oh, there he is. Okay. Thank you.
And Mayor Pro Tem.
Let me just say, John King, my continuing planning commissioner, is here as well. Thank you, John.
Stand up, John.
30 years. I have one appointment to fill an unscheduled vacancy, and that's Shirley Gibson. I'm pleased to welcome her to the Historical Resources Commission. Thank you.
Thank you. My appointments would be to the Planning Commission, John Mack. I don't know if he's here tonight. There he is. Hi, John. Thank you for willingness to serve. For Parks and Rec, Patty Walsh. Thank you very much for offering to serve. On the Traffic Commission, Aaron Henkel is here. For the Downtown Parking and Advisory Board, Mike Zimmerman. And for the Architectural Review Committee, John Rabatsky. Don't know if John's here. And on...
Yeah, wait. He's in the back. By the exit.
He is. Okay. Thank you, John. And on the Historical Resources Committee, reappointing Norma Harlow. So those are the proposed appointments. And I'd also like to thank the outgoing commissioners, committee members, and board members. Those include Lisa Sparrow, Randy Russom, Roxanne Shankland, Matthew Brownlee, Gary Borda, and Greg Moore. And I want to thank them for their service, and we will have a, at the next council meeting, we'll be presenting them with some service awards for the city. So we thank them very much for their service. So with that, is there a motion to adopt?
I'd move for approval.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the appointments. May I have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Harmon?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes. Thank you. Item 9, there's no public hearings. We have no continued business. Our new business is item 11A, selection of alternatives for environmental study for the Bridge Street Bridge Improvement Project. Consideration of Amendment Number 2 to Consultant Services Agreement with Quincy Engineering Incorporated and Budget Amendment. And Director McClish has the staff report tonight.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. We're going to be pulling up the presentation for you this evening. We are going to
use this opportunity to provide you a brief status report of the project to date and ask for your consideration to move on to the next phase. Our project is to address deficiencies with the Bridge Street Bridge project, and I'm going to go ahead and walk through some general milestones that to date, and then I would like to hand it off to the consultant team that's here tonight to present to you, and that is Mark Reno of Quincy Engineering, Greg Young, Quincy Engineering, and Jill McPeak of Wallace Group, who is available for questions. So in the late 1990s, we identified the deficiencies in our beloved Bridge Street Bridge, and we did secure some funding for very preliminary analysis of alternatives. Since that time, and we began the search for funding for the project. In 2005, preliminary analysis of alternatives was completed. In 2010, the city was able to secure the Highway Bridge Program grant funding for engineering and construction, and this was a very significant milestone, as the funding is 100%, and we didn't have to come up with a match. In 2002, after a competitive RFP process, city hired Quincy Engineering to perform the engineering work and with sub-consultants the environmental work. In 2012 and 2013, improvement alternatives were developed, a series of alternatives. And in fall of 2013, we held the first community meeting to discuss these alternatives, to introduce the project and potential alternatives to the public. In January of 2014, we held the first stakeholders group meeting. The stakeholders group consists of various members of committees and commissions and community groups that was set by the council to help usher this project forward. We held a second community meeting in 2014. And we've continued through the beginning of into the spring of 2014 with stakeholder group meetings, really taking a look at alternatives. And these are in preliminary concept phase, but we're trying to figure out essentially alternatives that were most feasible to move forward with. In May of 2014, Caltrans authorized and requested additional analysis on rehabilitation options. This is a very important milestone as well, because we were really trying to figure out if there was a replacement or a rehabilitation option available to us. Quincy finalized a report in August of 2014, and in September, Caltrans reviewed it and authorized a preliminary design of two alternatives. And this was helpful to us so that we didn't have to, with very preliminary information, try to choose a preferred alternative or try to pick one in order to go forward with the next phase of environmental study. In October, we got the formal notice that the Highway Bridge Program funding was available, and we've been meeting with the stakeholders groups and Friends of the Bridge group representatives to alert them to the next opportunity phase of the project. And with that, I would like to go ahead and introduce again Mark Reno from Quincy Engineering. He's going to go a little bit over the background and the alternatives for you.
All right. Thank you very much. Actually, I think what I will do is I'm going to go ahead and have Greg come up and talk a little bit about the replacement alternatives, and then I'll finish with the rehabilitation alternatives and then kind of go over some of the next steps that we see in this process. So, Greg.
Thank you very much. I always like to start off the presentation with all of our favorite picture here. It doesn't get much better than that. I think it's still up at City Hall. It's just really cool. The bridge was built in 1908, so it turned 107 this year. And so, like most things that are 107 years old, needs a little of attention from time to time. Quite a bit has gone on through its history. And two main points I wanted to make here was that the Highway Bridge Program quantitatively rates all the bridges in the country. And there's a formula, and it's called the sufficiency rating, and it's supposed to be a measure of what kind of condition your bridge is in. Currently, we're at about 12.8% out of a possible 100. And the other point I wanted to make here is some traffic counts were done, and surprisingly, almost 3,400 vehicles per day going across that thing. So the combination of a low sufficiency and then a high use kind of increases the urgency of looking at some of these alternatives. The other thing I wanted to point out, you're going to hear a lot of discussion about what we call the supplemental trust. This is this brown trust structure, and the green is the original historical portion of it. The point I really want to make here is that this isn't actually a supplemental trust. It's actually carrying all the load currently. So the green historical bridge is actually not carrying load at the moment. So this is really what supports the existing trust that's historic and also all the vehicles today. Back in 1990, this supplemental trust was put in, and I want to touch on what this supplemental trust does and what it doesn't do. What it did is it increased the load capacity so we could keep going, and it's done its job for the last 25 years. It essentially has allowed the bridge to continue to be in service with no modification. What wasn't done when this was put in is there wasn't an evaluation of what the supplemental trust did to the historic nature of the existing. And there was also no analysis of seismic considerations or bridge scour, which is the hydraulic flows going through the bridge that can create some issues.
Excuse me, can you repeat that phrase so I understand what you said?
Okay, sorry about that. Yes, so when the supplemental trust was put in 1990, they basically put it in there to supplement the load of the existing bridge. But they didn't go through a historical evaluation. So when you modify an existing historic bridge, you should go through an analysis to see if some of the improvements you're making change the character of the bridge or change the appearance.
Scour comment that I
Oh, made. The scour. Okay. So when the best way I can explain it is if you go out to a river and you see a rock in a river and you see the water hit that rock and it kind of accelerates around it. That term is called scour, and what it does is it increases the velocity, so when it hits the existing bridge foundations, the water accelerates, and it actually can take out some of the soil material, and there is no evaluation because we don't have any as-builts. We have no idea what the existing foundations are, and so looking at some of the traffic way structure down in even 101 bridge, there's been some deficiencies with that scour as the material continues to erode away. Another point we want to make here is that the existing bridge from truss to truss is about 24 feet wide, and you can kind of see that there is no existing barrier that protects the existing elements, and so it has been impacted in the past by vehicles. And the approach roadway is significantly wider. You'll notice it kind of necks down when it gets to the existing bridge, and basically based on the existing traffic demand. This is too narrow by federal standard, and so it's given this tag called functionally obsolete. So we prepared basically five options that we looked at, and I'm going to cover the first three replacement ones, and then I'll turn it over to Mark. So this is kind of your I call this the baseline alternative. It's your typical concrete bridge, and not very. Many stakeholders are very fond of this option, but it is an option nonetheless just to see comparative costs for other options that we may look at. So this is kind of your baseline option. Conventional concrete structure, the existing historic truss is removed, and you know that could be relocated somewhere to a park or elsewhere, but it wouldn't continue to reside at this site. This is one where we actually remove the old historic truss, we remove the supplemental truss, we construct a new structure, and then we reattach the existing historical truss to that new structure. So you'll notice from the street view, it appears very similar to the existing condition. However, when you look at the side view, you are going to see another new concrete bridge, essentially, that's supporting it. Option 3 is basically what we call a replacement in kind. So we replace the existing steel truss with a new steel truss. You'll notice that it does appear different than the historical truss. Some of the connections to handle some of the higher loading today, they're a lot more beefy, and these members are thicker and bigger than what you see out there today with the existing.
All right, that brings us to our first kind of rehabilitation alternative. And this goes back to that in the previous community meetings that we had, there was more interest in looking at what these typical rehabilitation options would look like and what we could do with them. And so we really looked at two different alternatives. We'll call them 4A and 4B. And 4A is this first one here where we would actually be looking at removing that supplemental truss altogether. So we'd take out the brown truss that Greg had talked about, pulling that out. But then we would have to go through the exercise of making this historic truss actually carry all the load. And so if you kind of remember the picture that Greg showed on alternative 3 that had much bigger plates, we end up having to modify that existing historic truss quite a bit. And so like on the left, you're seeing where you have those lacing, what we call lacing is kind of the lacing bars on the vertical member. We're going to have to go with more plate and kind of cover up a lot of the things. So it's going to change the look and could have an effect on that. So even in doing that, we're still going to have a load-restricted bridge because there's only so much strengthening we can do to that old bridge to carry so much load. It'll still have a posting, and it won't carry full load. One other thing I wanted to mention, and you see it in the street view option there, is that in looking at trying to put some sort of barrier against from vehicles striking the truss. And so, you know, a vehicle driving through and getting snagging or hitting that truss, we may have to come up with some sort of system that will actually kind of protect vehicles from hitting that. And so that's kind of what you're seeing there where we saw install a vehicle railing. One thing to talk about, too, when we talk about the rehabilitation alternatives, because we have unknown foundations, what we're talking about doing here is we'd actually take away the truss. We'd close the road down during the construction. We'd take the truss away. We would completely rebuild those foundations because, you know, we would construct modern foundations. And one of the things you'll see between these rehabilitation alternatives and the ones that Greg covered is that you'll have additional foundations. Because the truss is, and the truss has a certain length, you're going to have a support in the creek that you'll have to replace. All three alternatives that Greg talked about previously, we were spanning the entire creek and keeping any of the foundations out of there, in part to avoid some environmental impacts and in part to just keep maintenance and everything else down. We were spanning the whole creek. Anytime we use the existing historic truss, we will have to put a support back where it was in the creek, and that will be something that we'll have to continue to look at in the future. Go to 4B. Now, 4B, recognizing that we just couldn't strengthen that truss enough, the other alternative we looked at was maybe replacing what we called the supplemental truss with a stronger truss that could carry more load and really increase the service load of that bridge, carry more live load traffic. There's an awful lot of truck traffic in that downtown corridor and trying to get the loading up. In that scenario, and you look at the side view picture there, there's a limit to how deep we can put that supplemental truss because of the 100-year water surface elevation gets up there. We can't necessarily go deeper, and so it's going to be more substantial. You know, there would have to be some discussions about what color we make it because it's going to look bigger and how that's incorporated with the historic truss. The historic truss would still be taken off and would be cleaned and painted and then put back on. But one other alternative that we can do both with this and the previous alternative is since the truss elements themselves are really the historic element, we could replace the floor beam, which is going to be the element between the two trusses, to make it a little bit longer, a little bit wider, so that we can get that barrier in to protect those trusses. And so currently it's 24 feet. If we wanted to put a barrier in there, we could maybe go to 26 feet. So just a slight widening, but enough that we can protect the truss in place. Brings us to the fifth option, and for any of the environmental document processes, you always do have to look at what they call the do-nothing alternative. Greg talked about the sufficiency rating of 12.8 out of 100. The other thing that I'd like to talk about is that it's posted at a 3-ton maximum load limit. So Caltrans, and when they do their inspections, they do an evaluation, they give you a load rating. 3 tons is the absolute minimum before they close the bridge. So it can't go any lower than what it's posted now. So that's the limit that it's at. If things continue to degrade, then at some point you would have to close the bridge if nothing's done. One of the issues, too, is that if you were to just close the bridge and say we'll just use it to pedestrian traffic, one consideration is the bridge then falls out of the HBP program. So then it would no longer be eligible for these grants that we're currently seeking. So that's just something to keep in mind. So in the staff report and in the information presented, there's very, very detailed matrices with advantages and disadvantages. And what we tried to do is just boil down a few of these elements here to talk about. And, you know, we're here for any kind of questions that we want to talk about on any of the things. We're looking at some preliminary costs between the alternatives, where we've actually run the numbers now and looked at some of these different alternatives. Looking at the construction duration, one thing to keep in mind is that with all the alternatives we're talking about now, we're talking about closure of the bridge during the construction. And so you're looking at timelines of when that road essentially would be closed. Another column here is 100% federally funded. And so what we're talking about here is that the program would fund these alternatives. And I just want to touch on, so on option 2, we say salvage and relocate. So more than likely that would be covered. The only reason it might not be is if the bridge was to be taken and relocated to another site, there's a limit to how much money would be spent on the program. And so for the most part, we can say that alternative is covered, but I just wanted to make that one stipulation in there. Also on alternative 4A and 4B, we've gone through the process with the cost estimating, and Caltrans has essentially given us the nod that either of these alternatives would be fundable. Probably one of the biggest things to look at, though, we'll get down to the width. That's where I was just talking about. There is the ability to make these a little bit wider so that we can get a barrier in there and really protect the vehicles correctly and protect the bridge itself. Future maintenance, and so this is more of kind of a relative cost. So we're looking at, you know, the first alternatives being concrete bridges that span the channel completely. Those are very low maintenance, low future maintenance costs. Looking at a replacement in kind of a steel bridge, you still will have any kind of maintenance that comes with the steel bridge, painting, maintaining. And then option 4A or 4B, you're still going to have the same elements in terms of maintaining the steel bridge. But then again, because we now have a channel, we have a support in the channel, you're still going to have maintenance and things that go along with that as well. So that kind of gives you, it's more of a relative cost at this point. And then finally, because this was, you know, in listening to the stakeholder groups, their real concern is eligibility in terms of the historic resource. And so looking at these alternatives, under option 1, 2, and 3, all of those would make the bridge ineligible. So the bridge would no longer be eligible for National Register of Historic Places. In terms of option 4A and 4B, because it was in one column, I said ineligible and eligible. Option 4A, where we no longer have that supplemental truss and we're just strengthening the existing bridge as much as we can, likely would have enough altercation or alterations to it that bridge may not possibly no longer be historically eligible. And so we kind of had a preliminary assessment by our historian. And so the 4A has the potential of not being eligible any longer. But 4B, his preliminary assessment would say that we would maintain the historic eligibility. Okay. Just kind of roughly showing the detour, because as I mentioned, each of these alternatives now where we're looking at having to replace the foundations completely or the alternatives that span the creek, we would be closing Bridge Street down during those durations and then having to look at possible detour routes and signage and public outreach in terms of where the traffic's going to go. But that would be the preliminary detour that we've kind of had thrown together. So future activities, this is part of what we're here for tonight is the City Council to consider the two alternatives in addition to a no build for the environmental studies. And I'd really like to take a minute to just kind of thank both the city and Caltrans for actually doing this. that they're allowing us to really carry two designs through the environmental phase, which I think is good. It's good on their part, because often we'll choose one and then we'll get so far down in the environmental document phase and realize that maybe it was the wrong alternative to get behind. There's a lot of backup and there's waste of time and resources. And so they were willing to work with us on this and say we can take both two of these alternatives into the environmental process and then get real detailed information in terms of historic eligibility and costs and things like that that we can then really weigh into the environmental process and walking through the evaluation of the historic resource and potential impacts. And so that's really key that they've agreed to go ahead and go forward with the two alternatives. We'd move into the environmental studies along with these preliminary designs so we can really study the impacts and elements. There would be the circulation of the draft environmental document, the public comment period as well. And then moving forward, the City Council would adopt the environmental document with, at that point, we would need to go forward with one preferred alternative. And so that, at that point, you know, we really would should have all the information we need to make that correct decision of what's the best decision for this particular site and for the city. After that, the final design would go forward with just the one alternative all the way into design and then construction. This is a schedule that we've been working on, and so we're kind of looking at, you know, identifying those environmental study alternatives here in the spring, you know, moving forward with the evaluation right now and into the spring, doing the environmental studies and putting that work together, really looking to hopefully have the draft environmental document about a year from now is what we'd like to have. And so that would be another time. I'm pretty sure in talking with both Jill and Teresa that there'd be various stages where we'd be touching in with the stakeholder groups and making sure that they're informed and working closely with them along the way. I think at that point, that's it. But thank you for the opportunity to kind of brief you on the project.
So we are available for questions. I know that there's many folks in the audience that are here in relationship to the Bridge Street Bridge project. I am aware of one speaker who has a presentation.
Would you like to put on that presentation now or have questions first?
I would suggest questions first.
Okay. Councilmember Guthrie.
My first question has to do with the vehicle railing, which I'm guessing is like K-rail or something. Is that on all of the bridge alternatives? I mean, even the new bridge? I assume that, but I didn't hear that.
Yeah. Any of the design alternatives would look at that. With the newer bridges, we would actually be able to size the width a little bit more so we can get a proper rail in. Mm-hmm. What we'd be looking at to do in some of the rehabilitation alternatives is put something in that just isn't so doesn't just block everything, because, I mean, we're still trying to maintain that historic resource. So trying to find some way of providing something that will still provide protection of the truss and vehicles. So
that was the second half of my question. Is there an alternative to K-rail?
Yeah. So with even with the newer concrete options, there's some of the more open rails that kind of mirror older historic bridge rails with openings in them and things like that. That's something we'd look at.
Okay. And then the timing of the environmental study, how long do you guys think that that's?
Working it through the process, I thought we were talking about trying to have that draft about a year from now in terms of that would be, it'd be along with basically the preliminary designs for both alternatives.
So if we were to do them one at a time, we'd be potentially looking at 2 years.
Correct.
If we took the, okay,
yeah.
That's a long time. Okay, and then the rehabilitation, I think in both of the rehabilitations, you are going to have to put in new substructure, I'll call it, new supports, as opposed to just spanning the entire deal with one of the new ones. And is that something that is, I realize that in the rehabilitation projects, you certainly have to do it, but do you know for certain that you would not have to do it in the new bridge and the restored bridge with the old parts glued back on?
Maybe I didn't quite follow the question.
Okay, so in alternative in alternatives 1 and 2, mm-hmm. and I believe alternative 3, we're going to bridge the whole creek.
Correct.
And therefore would not need to work on the two outside supports, if I'm understanding correctly.
If I said that, I didn't mean to say that. We still would have new supports at either end of the bridge up on the banks, but we wouldn't be doing work down in the creek.
Working in the creek. Whereas if you use the old bridge, you would have to work down in the creek, and that's the big difference. Okay, yeah. I understand.
Because with that historic truss, we're still tied to that length, and so even though we'd like to span the whole thing, we have to go to where that truss was. And I think most people understand that the truss was there, and then back in 29 with the flood, it dropped, and actually the whole truss actually fell down. And so when they put it back up, they had to put in that additional span. And so that's why there's kind of the two spans out there. Okay. Is that originally it was just to span the channel, but with the floods it actually opened that up and created that longer bridge.
All right, now I understand that. All right, thank you.
Yeah,
those are my questions.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem.
Yes, thank you. The supplemental truss is what's underneath the bridge, correct? And then the truss, because it kind of goes back and forth in the report, and I finally kind of put that together. The green truss is on top. The supplemental truss is underneath.
Correct.
Okay. And yeah, I have questions for staff, but let me just look through them for you. So the option 4B, I know in the very beginning we had talked about, which wasn't option 4, it was called something else, but that's where it could be potentially as narrow as it is, and we had talked about one way. So is that still an option that's being thrown around or not? Is it two-way now?
I suppose it's still an option, but we have a viable two-way for 4B.
Okay.
There again, I think just going back to that, you have a very high traffic count going down that bridge, and so then to make it one way, it's really going to complicate, I think, some of the other locations.
Okay. So when we thought about perhaps having it one way, did we not think the traffic count was going to be that high? I can't remember what it was or what an old traffic count was.
Well, that's when we did go out and conduct the traffic study to determine the traffic counts and the load that we would need to bring the bridge up to. And the original concept of option 4, the one way was looked at because we knew we wouldn't be able to bring that alternative at that time, because we weren't looking at that supplemental truss, we wouldn't be able to bring it up to standard or even close. So we were trying to figure out ways to keep it open mm-hmm. with a rehab alternative.
Okay.
But now we have 4B, right. And we can carry, we can bring it up higher.
Okay.
If you want to go down a couple slides where that matrix table was. Right there. So looking at the width, we have the different width options there. So in the replacements, we were looking at a 28-foot wide. So that gives us the clearance and gives us the barrier that we can put in place. And then on the rehab and retrofit options, we're looking at anywhere from a 24 to 28. So we could make a little bit wider, and that kind of just depends on what barrier system we come up to protect that historic truss.
Okay. You're thinking that probably an EIR is going to be required for either of the options that we're studying right now going forward?
That's likely a likely document at this time. The call is too premature to call the document at this point because the study has not been done. But I would anticipate with potential impacts, we would be looking at an EIR for both option 2 and 4B.
Okay. And then I have some questions. I think you can jump in, but I have some questions for Teresa. Teresa, I talked to you earlier about in the staff report or maybe in an email, it was you had brought up the point that if we go with, say, option 4B, we wouldn't be eligible for Highway Bridge Program funding for a minimum of 10 years. But as far as the maintenance goes, what's involved in maintaining that bridge, do you think, in the next 10, 20 years, 4B?
I'd actually, I'm going to ask Quincy to answer that. This is what would be expected with maintenance in the next 10 years because we wouldn't be able to get any funding in that time.
Yeah, I think part of the question I heard was the inspections, and so the inspections are all covered in terms of there's no fee for that. So Caltrans still handles the inspections on the bridge. I guess I should caveat that they handle the inspections as long as the bridge still carries vehicles. Because I know at one point another alternative early on that we talked about was turning this into a pedestrian bridge. Right. If it became a pedestrian bridge, then all the inspection work would be, and those costs would have to be borne by the city in your program funding. So okay. In the first 10 years, you wouldn't be looking at, wouldn't anticipate much maintenance work. Most of the coating systems, you know, because we're close to the coastal, you know, you're going to look at a fairly substantial coating system we'd want to put on the bridge. And so typically the life on those is in the 20 to 30 year range. Okay. But if you get out 20 to 30 years and there does need to be a new coating, typically if the coating system is in bad enough, is in a state where it needs to be fixed, the federal HPP program has a painting program, but then typically you're looking at about 11.5% would be the local match, because that kind of falls back into the 11.5%, 88.5%.
But the maintenance is mostly in the painting of the, which we just did recently, the painting of the truss. There's not, once we rehab this, rehabilitate it, it would be pretty much good to go for a while because it's going to be all beefed up, and there's nothing that we'd have to do anytime soon when the city bears the responsibility in if we chose option 4B, is my question.
No, there shouldn't be. Again,
you promise.
I was wondering if you're headed there. I've actually worked on a lot of rehabilitation of steel bridges, and the thing I always tell people is, you know, with all the new environmental restrictions, we don't get to use lead paint anymore. Right. Lead paint was fantastic in terms of it may have been bad for us, but it was great for our structures. So the coating systems with lead work better, last longer. These newer coating systems don't necessarily have the longevity to them, but then again, you're still looking that you should be into the 20, 30 years before you're going to have to worry about it too much.
Okay. And then When this is brought back to council, when these two alternatives are studied, you're going to bring one back as a staff recommendation, but we still have the option of looking at any of the alternatives that were given to us in the beginning, correct?
That's correct. The environmental review will require us to keep a reasonable range of alternatives in for study. These two that we're recommending, you know, to you this evening will be studied in much greater detail. Right. But, yes, you still have that option available to you even at that time. But you'll have a lot more information.
Okay. Okay, I think those are my only questions. Thank you. Thank you, Teresa.
Councilmember Harmon?
I just have a couple. It has to do with, again, option 4B. And on the slide that's open right now, on 4B, if you make it less than 28 feet, would that then lead us into problems with it not being, with it still being functionally obsolete? It was my understanding that 24 makes it functionally obsolete. So do I understand that correctly?
Yes, you do. One caveat with the program is that with historical trusses, or not just historical trusses, with historical bridges, normally, if you want to use HPP or federal funding, you have to eliminate the functional obsolete condition. With historical bridges, there sometimes is the caveat that if you can show that some of the impacts to the resource are such that it then sometimes they will actually allow you to not meet the functional obsolete. So the 4B could still remain. I guess one of the things we tell people, though, is that it's right now it's 24 feet between those two historic trusses right now. So we'd like to get a little bit wider so there, again, we can get that barrier system in to kind of protect vehicles from hitting it. Even at 28, which is kind of all of the alternatives have 28 feet, we're going to have to seek a design exception because the 28 feet doesn't even meet the criteria for the amount of traffic that we have on that road.
So it's pretty much to sync with the load and the traffic related to the width that they want
Correct.
Required.
Yep.
Very good. A couple more on 4B. So on full load capacity, mm-hmm. so under 4A and B, it says no. So is that another exception, or would that mean proceeding with that option, we'd run in again to not having full load capacity, which then would run into what we're trying to fix?
Well, when you talk about the load capacity, that I guess there's a level of the load capacity. Right now, the load capacity is so low. I mean, we're down at 3 tons. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to say there is that in the 4A option, we can strengthen it to a point that we're still going to have to, there'll still be some posting, but it's going to carry higher vehicles, heavier vehicles, heavier truck. And with that new rating, the sufficiency rating, which Greg talked about, the health index, would go high enough that Caltrans is all right if we ended up with some posting on the bridge still.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, we can go to the detailed matrix from the report if we wanted to.
That just kind of connects the dots for me related to that issue.
Yeah.
And then lastly, did I understand that the environmental clearance is projected summer of 2016?
Yeah, that's our target right now.
Projected,
yeah.
You know,
that's the target that we're working towards now, assuming that we can come out of this fairly soon with the two alternatives we're going to carry further in the design.
Okay.
And just going back to your load question, so Caltrans has looked at, in the detailed rehabilitation report we gave Caltrans, we basically showed them what live load, you know, vehicles we could get up to, and then their assessment and review of the report was they still said that those options would be fundable.
Oh, very good. Okay, thank you. That's all the questions I have.
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you. Don't sit down. I mean, sit down if you need to. But
no, that's all right. That's all right.
Okay, so I'm not the brightest knife in the drawer, and so I'm just trying to get a few questions answered here. The thing I'm trying to figure out is when we first talked about this whole thing, there was a big discussion about it was more of what's the distance of pedestrians from vehicle traffic versus trying to save the trust. I've never heard a real discussion about saving the trust as much as Caltrans was worried that the distance between walking traffic on the bridge and vehicle traffic was too close.
Well, in part because right now the way it's set up is there still is nothing from stopping a vehicle from driving through the trust. I mean, depending on where you are on the bridge, a vehicle could actually go through that truss and hit someone on the walkway. And so what we're trying to do is set up some sort of system there that separates the pedestrian from the...
But is it based on a regulation to help the pedestrians or save the truss? Because I've never heard this argument that we've been trying to save the truss. It's always been that Caltrans had a specific concern about the distance between vehicles driving down the road and pedestrians walking alongside. So if you could clarify that for me.
Let me see if I can elaborate a little more. So in order to use program funds, your bridge is supposed to have a crash-tested railing. And so it's twofold. One is it's to protect the vehicles from the pedestrians, and then also to protect the truss from the vehicles as well. And so... That's kind of one of the ties with the funding is having this interior barrier. And so the distance between the pedestrian and the vehicles, it's less about that and more about having a crash-tested barrier on the bridge itself for vehicles
so they
don't go off.
So the second part of my question would be, I guess, then you're going from 24 feet to 28 feet. Is that the bare minimum that you need in order to put this barrier in?
There's a slide, actually. It's at the after the presentation. Try to prepare for everything. Keep going. Next one, I think. Yeah, that one. So this is the AASHTO standards for widths. And in the table, it's kind of hard to read from out there. But basically what it says is if your vehicle count is over 2,000 vehicles per day, that you have to have the traveled way plus 3 feet on each side, which puts your standard width at 30 feet. As Mark said, if the truss is considered historic, then we can go less than that, all the way down to 28 with the design exception. And I'm sorry, I didn't say that correctly. So anything less than 30 is going to require a design exception. And that's from the stakeholder groups. That was one of the main primary concerns, is they didn't want a big wide bridge. So they wanted that thing as narrow as possible. And so working with Caltrans and looking at the tables, 28 feet removes the functionally obsolete tag, but it still requires a design exception. And so for all the replacements, 28 clear is basically the absolute minimum. Now, if the option 4 goes ahead, option 4B, where the truss remains historical, then you can actually go less than 28 feet because you can keep that functionally obsolete tag.
Okay, so my other question you talked about, and I was thinking about this until you actually raised the number and you brought it to my attention again. The traffic counts are in a large portion to why we're doing what we're doing, it seems like. And some of the regulations are based on traffic counts. So I guess my question is, and I mean, I know we're not headed this way, but I got to at least ask the question. If we made it a one-way bridge, would we lower the traffic counts enough that we would have less of an issue regarding the width of the bridge?
Yes, that's correct.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Actually, if you go to the detailed matrix, so it's more towards the presentation. One more. I think this one here. Again, for those that don't have good eyes, I might have to go over there myself.
Thanks a lot.
So,
want to borrow my glasses?
It should be in the staff report. Thank you. This is good. So what we did is we looked at three different configurations. We looked at the 24-foot width, which is only allowed to stay if the bridge is historical. We looked at a 28-foot width, and then we looked at a one-way. And it has impacts on the width, and it also has impacts on the loading because you're only carrying one lane of traffic versus potentially two. And so the load ratings do go up. So the sufficiency rating with the one-way traffic actually jumps all the way up to 82.7%, whereas you're down in the mid to low 70s if you keep it two-way. And that's largely in part due to the vehicle load capacity.
Well, it seems like, just based on what you're telling me, and again, you're the engineer, I'm not, but it seems like we solve a lot of our problems if we did that.
There is a circulation issue to consider, because usually when you open up one road to one-way traffic, you have to have a couplet going the other way on an adjacent block. And so that's something that would need to be studied.
Okay. The other question I have, and I appreciate your detail on that because that answers a lot of my questions there. There's going to be some construction disruption to the businesses along Bridge Street, and particularly the McClintock's the one I think of, although there's other businesses there as well. Was there any discussion from those stakeholders about construction time and effects on their business? And
I know that they were at stakeholder meetings, and that has been brought up, and I'm sure people here tonight will bring it up again. So it is a consideration, and looking at the different options, they have different time durations associated with it. So that could have an impact on what some may consider their preferred alternative.
I guess, and again, maybe, Teresa, I'm just thinking again outside the box or whatever. I'm trying to figure out, is there some way we can lessen the impact or help those business holders, you know, those businesses along Bridge Street during construction, so that their business doesn't drop off? And maybe there isn't an answer. I mean, maybe there's not a good answer, but it just comes to mind that it's going to create some sort of, it's not only disruption for the through traffic, but it's for people trying to make a living as well.
Yes, and certainly in the community meetings and the stakeholder meetings, the businesses and the chamber, are very interested and concerned about the length of closure. It is listed, as a disadvantage to some of the rehab alternatives because those take longer to construct. So we know we're concerned about the length of closure, and these are very broad estimates at this time. Once we get into the design, we'll start getting a better idea about really what we're looking at. And then we're going to have to look at time of year, festivals and squeezing it in at the best possible time. And we'll have to, bring back to you, several options in terms of how we can best address address that at that future time. Mark, you did you have anything else?
No, I think that's exactly right. I guess the one other point I wanted to add was that even in some of the outreach meetings that we've done already, there was concern from some of the business owners about the one-way traffic, just because that then affects access into their businesses as well. So there was a few that got up and said something in those meetings that really concerned them going to a one-way, because that felt like they were going to get less traffic actually coming
all the way through. Okay, and then again, just because I'm ignorant, I'm trying to learn here, that the construction that's in the middle of the creek, mm-hmm. and the scouring issue that you brought up earlier, is there some assumption that whatever you build will take on whatever conditions might occur over the next 50 years, 100 years?
Yeah, the short answer is yes. Knowing and having good information in terms of flows and channel and scour degradation, I mean, there's historic information in the channel in terms of how much it's dropped. Greg had mentioned, that there are some issues that even with the traffic way bridge, and then actually if you go further down the Caltrans 101 bridge, they've had quite a bit of scour, and they've gone in and done scour mitigation to those bridges. Those bridges were all, especially the 101 bridge, is much more modern than the one that we're looking at. So when we look at that in the design of the foundations, we anticipate it. Obviously, the benefit of the first three alternatives is we just span it, and we don't have to worry about it. The supports are up out of the creek. But we would design for it, and there's a fair amount of conservatism in the design of that foundation, so that we're anticipating any kind of continued degradation. The bridge will be supported for it. So. And part of the problem in terms of that duration, though, is that because there's a limited time that we can do the work in the creek. If we're doing the work all outside the creek, our permits and our environmental windows open up a lot more. Once we get to doing work down in the creek, we get into tighter time frames and limiting when we can actually do the work.
Well, and that brings up, I guess, I thought I was done, but I have one more. Fish and game, those type of folks.
Yeah.
Are we gonna get, besides our environmental document, are we going to get, grief discussion about how that is done right there and what its effect might have on the flow or fish or wildlife or whatever?
Yeah.
Is that going to be an issue going forward?
Yes. Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, with the whole permitting process, I mean, those are the new rules we play by now. And so we do the environmental document, then we go into the permitting phase. Also working for San Luis Obispo County, getting ready to replace the Branch Mill Road Bridge just a further up this summer. And so working through that, we worked very closely with NOAA Fisheries in terms of looking at impacts to the channel. They are requiring us to do a little bit of grading and cleaning up and maintenance to the channel while you're in there, which certainly wouldn't be a bad idea to do where this bridge is located. So. Yeah, they kind of tie your hands and make you follow some of the rules. But in the end, they're trying to make it, a better system and make sure that there's no fish passage issues and things like that.
So in the end, we might be better off than we are now, quite honestly.
Correct, yeah.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, those are my questions, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. I think most of the questions have been asked. I guess my remaining question would be, since the quote-unquote supplemental trust is really what's
carrying the load.
Could not the supplemental trust span the creek entirely within, like, aprons that go onto the bridge?
We talked about that and was also one of the concerns a little bit with the replacement alternative when we put the historic trust just mounted to the outside of the bridge, is that the visual aspect of having this historic trust come down to nothing. I mean, there's no support there. Then how it's evaluated in terms of did it maintain its historic eligibility, it may not. And so that was kind of we started going down the path of, well, if the key is to maintain historic eligibility, then we got to kind of put back essentially what we had without changing the characteristics too much.
Okay. Thank you. I think that concludes my questions, so we can move to public comment. Surely.
Hello to Mayor and Council. Shirley Gibson for Bennett Loomis Archives. And Teresa, I think, said we had our first stakeholder meeting about a year ago. I feel like I've been working on this for 5 years, but maybe not. When we first heard about this, I was concerned that rehabilitation of the bridge might not be at the top of the list for the City Council. So immediately when we heard about this, my mother and I made flyers, went to farmers market, and then we started petitions and basically nagging friends and family. And then Chuck Fellows has been helping us a lot. And so I kind of look at it that our historic buildings and bridges make Arroyo unique and special. People want to move here, and they do that when they spend a lot of money. The tourists want to come here, and Arroyo isn't a strip mall with generic businesses, so let's keep it that way. So I brought a few slides to share with you. This is a shot of the swinging bridge, and it was built in about the 1880s and went down a few times in the floods. You can go to the next one. Thank you. In the 1950s, the city thought it was unsafe, and so they put a 300-gallon water tank in the center and then lined the rest of the bridge with 55-gallon drums of water, and that supposedly to a Los Angeles engineer was going to make it collapse. Well, it didn't, luckily for us. And just I mention it as a cautionary tale that sometimes decisions are made and luckily, they don't happen. Next one. And again, the swinging bridge. And then if you see that tower up there, that's the hose tower for the fire station, which used to be approximately right where we are. And then this is a shot of the Mason Street Bridge before it was a concrete bridge now. And to the right is the, I call it the Lovett House, but it goes back to J.T. Richards. And at one point, that was a sanitarium. And you can see how the creek has changed over the years, and it was washed out. That was probably after a big flood year. Could be early 1900s or 1911, somewhere in there. Next one. Now, this is the PC Railway Bridge, which is ran alongside of EC Loomis Mill, and the bridge would have been on that on the south side of Branch Street. And that was probably about 1911. A lot of the bridges would go down, you know, kind of one after another. Next one. Thank you. Now, this is a shot of Bridge Street. And it's looking towards Branch Street, and the big building is the Ryan Annex, which is now the old Bank of America building, which has an antique store now. And that's before they could pave. That's the sprinkler truck. This one. So this is a earlier bridge on Bridge Street, and you can see Ira's building kind of on the corner, Ira's bike shop, and then the building with the little round top, that is the Ryan Hotel, which now is the stucco building that has the Village Grill and the baseball card shop. And that was actually, I think, a wood truss bridge. Next one. And this shows where a Los Angeles firm bid, and for $10,000, they're building the Bridge Street Bridge. Okay. Yeah, I wish it cost that much now. And then here's another shot of the bridge. And the church down there would have been the Cumberland Presbyterian Church, where now it was Grace Bible, and not sure what the building is now. So. And this is the Army, and they're either looking for a Tascadero or a Pancho Villa. Not sure. Yeah, they went up to where the Rhine Hotel, where the B of A building, and they camped out up behind that building, and that's about 1909. And here's another view of the Bridge Street Bridge. It was built in 1908. And it has served us well for over 106 years. Think about that, being 106. I can barely deal with being 65. Next one. And this is the 1914 flood, and the south end was washed out of the bridge. And at that point, it was built in 1908. 1911, Arroyo incorporated. And then when the bridge washed out, so recently after they built it, then they had a vote to disincorporate so that the county could pay for the bridge. And they actually had a vote, and of course all the saloon keepers wanted to disincorporate so they could go back into business. Arroyo was dry at that point. Anyway, they did win the vote, but not by a big enough margin. And basically, if you look at early Arroyo, it was a town of churches, saloons, and bridges. I'm not saying which order, but. And this is another picture of the south end of the bridge, and then you can see the Oddfellows Hall in the background. Next one. And then another shot after the storm. They tended to like train wrecks and bridge collapse. They always photographed those. Next. And just another shot, and you can see how washed out. So, next. And that's just a short article, and the bridge is a Pratt Pony Truss type, and those used to be so common, and now our bridge, I believe, is one of the four that's left in the state. And another article on how they wanted to preserve it. That's 1989, and they considered tearing it down at that point. And that's it, Bennett Loomis Archives. So I wanted to close with preserve our history and support rehabilitation of the bridge. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Aaron Hinkle here in Roy Grande, 196 South Alpine. First, let me say I love the bridge. I'm a native to the Five Cities, so I've been here basically 52 years. The bridge is something special. But one thing as a city we have to look at is the life cycle cost on the bridge. I wonder if they did a a study of the stream bed, because usually Army Corps is going to request a study of the stream bed up and down a certain distance to really verify what the degradation is and what this will do. Because if you put a pier in the middle, you're still going to have some degradation because of the velocities that are going to go around that pier. It's going to speed up, and you're going to degrade the creek bottom. I think there's ways that we could probably simple span it, which would get us out of the creek, get us out of the problem with the environmental impacts to the creek. That is a steelhead creek. It is known to have steelhead in it, which means you're going to be going through Army Corps, U.S. Wildlife, pretty much everybody to do whatever you're going to have to do because you're down in a live stream. You're going to have dewatering issues and a lot of other issues with working in the stream bed. I just think we need to really keep a very open mind. Yes, we need to keep our heritage, but maybe we can do something else with the structure to make it a footbridge someplace. And make the street so that it can carry all the loading for now and for the future. Because the city's going to grow. People are coming here. People want to live here. It's not like when I was a kid where you could ride horses up Grand Avenue. I mean, we took dune buggies all the way up into the village when I was a kid and nobody cared. It's not happening anymore. So people are going to come. And if we don't plan for the future, we're planning for failure. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comment?
I'm Margot Rosato, and I want to thank you, Mr. Brown, for bringing up the business community in Arroyo Grande. We came here 5 years ago, my husband and I, and we purchased the building at 132 and developed Sienna Home Boutique, Home Gift, and now a wine tasting boutique. And we've made a considerable investment. We lived through the recession, and now we're looking at bridge closing for an 8-month period. It's scary. And I understood that Bob Lund either made a recommendation or was going to make a recommendation that there be a pedestrian bridge during the time of the construction so that we could still have traffic. I don't know if that's a possibility, but we would support that. And we know something has to be done, and we support that as well. We're just concerned. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment?
I'm Cindy Hansen, and I live in Arroyo Grande. I think what this gentleman said is true. People do want to live here. We do have tourists. But I think the reason that's true is because we did have city leaders that had foresight and were willing to make the effort to have some of our treasures preserved. And I think one of the reasons that we like this bridge is that it is small, that it's 24 feet, that it is pedestrian friendly. And I think from what I'm understanding is the rail that we're going to have to protect the truss or protect vehicles or protect pedestrians may be unsightly. It's going to require more width. And I just think that takes away from the character and the appearance of that bridge. Are we letting the tail wag the dog to go after a certain amount of money? Are we going to spend excess money to make it fit what's being required? Really, should we look at what is good for Arroyo Grande, what's good for that bridge, what's it going to take to make that function and work, and what's that cost? Do we really need to expand and grow and be bigger and be a 28-foot with a rail to get money to do something big? It just seems to me backwards.
Thank you. Other comment?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, City Council persons. I'm Manetta Bennett, 415 Allen Street. I've lived here forever. I'm part of the Bennett Loomis Archives, and we worked hard, as my daughter said, to get the petitions signed by everybody. The merchants in town helped us out. Cousins and relatives helped us out. We have 1,100 signatures that are in support of us. Thank you.
Thank you. John.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council. John Mack, 1501 Loganberry. If I can just back up the slide a few to the first slide that the engineers had presented, I had a couple questions. And it had to do with how you determined your trip generation. I think it was like the very, the sufficiency rating, the ADT, the 3483. The question I have, because I just don't know if we have enough information to really move forward on a solution tonight, because I really am intrigued about making it one way. So was the trip generation, did it distinguish between coming into town versus out of town? And what were those values?
We don't have the information here, but we can provide
it. My observation is we mainly use that bridge to come in town. We do go out of town a lot, and the reason why we go out of town on that bridge is because we're not allowed to make a left-hand turn on Branch Street, or the main street. There's like this no left-hand turn. So when we come out of McClintock's, or we come out of the pizza parlor, we come out of the parking lot, we're making a left-hand turn and going across Bridge Street, because we can't get on the main road and get out to the freeway. I'm thinking if we looked at it from a traffic circulation standpoint, look at another alternative of how we really could move through the city, that really could be one way. That would drop down the ADT quite a bit, and maybe just rework the whole calculation that can work best for Caltrans and work best for the community. I just want to throw that out there. I don't think we really looked at that. And I really don't like the narrowing concept with the rail to protect the bridge. I think there's other alternatives. I think there's something that would be more in flavor of the historic, especially with the pictures that we just saw, to protect the bridge. I think there's some other concepts that are more, that might have more architectural flair and more in keeping with some of the past. So I just wanted to throw that out. And then when I look at 2 feet, I look at the ceiling tiles up here. Every one of these ceiling tiles is 2 feet wide. It's not that big. But I'm for preserving the bridge. I'm looking at that first and foremost. But I hate to be changing, you know, the character of the community based on values that are presented on this slide alone. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comment?
Yeah, my name's Rod Gibson, and I have just one question. Can we get your reports, your cost breakdowns on the different, options? Do you have them? So we could come in and get those whenever.
I think you want some detail.
No, what I want to see is why the option 4A and 4B cost twice as much as option 1. I don't understand. I'm in construction, and it just doesn't make sense. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. So that's what I want to see. I want to see your cost breakdowns on all the options and see why there's a big difference, if that's possible. Is it possible?
Mr. Mayor, yes, we can provide that information, at least, you know, in some detail that will show the reasons why the costs went up.
Okay. Thank you.
It sounds like we'll provide the information, but I think one of the key things to keep in mind and why that cost differential for 4A and 4B is 4A and 4B, there's another bridge being built to support the historic bridge. So you're really building almost two bridges. We're going to rehabilitate the historic bridge, but we're going to build another bridge underneath it that we're going to set it on top of. So you're essentially doubling your cost.
But why can't you span that?
Again, with what we've looked at so far, there's a concern of jeopardizing the historic eligibility. And so removing that span, and so it's no longer that pony truss going from these two supports, it may lose its national historic eligibility, which in working with the stakeholder group, that was a key component of they want to maintain. If we keep the bridge, we want to maintain the historic eligibility. Yeah, I'm sorry. The one other thing Greg just reminded me of, too, is that, and I think I touched on when I talked about the supplemental trust. Almost like the last slide in the very end. Do you see it? There's like an elevation view of the trust right there, yeah. So that's really what we're up against right there, is that this is the water surface elevation of which we have to keep anything supporting the bridge out of. So the 100-year water surface elevation is up at this level. So that supplemental truss can only go down so far. And so I guess kind of getting back to what we're talking about is that if you made that span that much longer, you would need it to be that much deeper. Again, looking at the historic eligibility, I think Greg touched on it, again, is that when that was first put in, there wasn't a whole lot of thought and analysis done to that of what was done to historic eligibility when we put another truss underneath it. But in our discussions with our historical person, he's saying, well, if you come in with these big, you know, deep beams, that is going to change the look and the appearance of that. And so he thinks that that may jeopardize that historic eligibility. Well, but the mass is what's there now. I mean, it's...
I don't want to really have a kind of a question and answer. If we could kind of take that offline, and if you have questions, I think some of those have probably been fairly well vetted. But I would encourage you to certainly look at the design and the design considerations of that. Is there any other public comment?
Steve Ross, 211 Garden Street. I have a lot of concerns, especially safety concerns, in regards to this project. The talk about the one-way aspect, you've got to figure out which one way you want to make it to go. If you do that, then pretty much you have to make Bridge Street, the entire street, that one direction. If you don't do that, then you'll have people, if you make it one way outbound, when you get across the bridge, you will have two-way traffic. That is basically frowned on significantly by all traffic regulations. Caltrans won't even let you build a off-ramp unless if there's going to be a street across, even if it's lighted, that's two-way. So making it a one-way street adds a lot of safety issues. Also would require the street to be one-way, whichever way was decided all the way through. Secondly, and something that I commented on before, Lucy Amara has a evacuation plan in case of Diablo meltdown. I believe it's in conjunction with engineers at Diablo when it was planned. Part of that evacuation plan is to take children from Branch Mill School and Paulding on buses and go south to Santa Maria outside of the proposed area that could be affected by the meltdown. Bridge Street is the outflow that they plan on using. So the street needs to be, bridge needs to stay, and it needs to be safe for that reason alone. What we're seeing here is that no matter what we do, it will really not maintain the historic eligibility of the bridge in a true sense. Already, the trusses, the supplemental trusses, have put in compromise the historic nature of the bridge. So all of those concerns, there's no way to make it a true historic bridge and make it a safe bridge at the same time. Funding, I believe, should be a lot more on everybody's mind. I'm the city's representative at the CTAC, the Citizens Transportation Advisory Board for SLOCOG. We saw this project in the year-end statement as far as funding and what was going to be coming up down the road several years in advance. Basically, Caltrans has that 80-point criteria that a bridge needs to fit in order for them to pay for the bridge to be built and to maintain it in perpetuity without the city having to pay. When I attended the stakeholders meeting, it was suggested that if we went with option 3, or what is now 4 or 4A, even potentially option 2, that the city would be required to pay a certain amount, potentially 30%, of the cost of the building of the bridge. If the total cost of building the bridge with environmental and all that came to $2 million or $3 million, we'd be looking at somewhere between $400,000 and $600,000 that the city would be responsible for, you know, paying in order to have the bridge rehabilitated. If it did still fit the 80-point criteria, Caltrans would still maintain it in perpetuity. I don't believe that the city can afford, you know, $400,000 to $600,000. We can't afford a police station. You know, the five cities fire has laid off people because they don't have funds to pay for firemen. I just don't think that spending that kind of money on this particular situation is prudent for the city. If we do what Caltrans wants, they will pay for the bridge, they will pay for the maintenance of the bridge in perpetuity, forever. I don't think that having saddling the city with future costs of maintenance is an appropriate thing to do. We're just taking the responsibility of the maintenance away from us and handing it to our kids. So we oftentimes, as individuals, talk about how let's not give our pass the problem to our grandkids. I don't think that we need to do that. I think what we need to do as a city is build a safe bridge. I think that we can potentially incorporate pieces of the old bridge or the style of the old bridge into it without compromising funding. Very little has been talked about funding. Certainly, $1.7 million and $4 million, if the city had to come up with some portion of that to make it work, I'd like to know where we would get it from. According to the intern who did the grant study on this, there's virtually no real grant money outside of Caltrans available to do this. So I think it's all nice and well and good to talk about the historic advantages of the bridge, but there are economic realities that we all have to face. There are safety realities we all have to face. And I think that what we need to do is go forward with a plan that doesn't encumber the city and its taxpayers now and in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Chuck.
Good evening, Mayor Hill and City Council members. I am Chuck Fellows. I live in the city for about 34 years now. And I'm a member of the Friends of the Virgin Street Bridge organization. And at this point, I'd like to ask the folks who are here in favor of saving the bridge to raise their hands. Thank you. I'm going to talk about one of the options, not both, mostly, but I am aware that there are two bridge options being considered tonight for future study. However, since there has been an outpouring of public support for option A, which is on the staff report, and as I believe I'm correct in saying that we've been talking about 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and 4, A, and B. Option A on the staff report is the same as 4, B. Is that correct? Never mind. Rehabilitation is what more. Thank you. Rehabilitation is what I'll be talking about versus a new bridge. During the last, 12 months? Seems like more. Maybe it was more than 12 months. A lot of time and energy, staff time and energy, and public's time and energy has gone into getting to the point where we are tonight. So I hope that the council will vote to accept the consultant's recommendation to, and I quote, select two alternatives with which to proceed for environmental study, end of quote. and as well as the other two parts of the staff recommendation. Many of us, including more than 2,600 folks who've signed local petitions and an online change.org petition, feel very strongly that the only right thing to do is to rehabilitate the Bridge Street Bridge, so it will remain eligible for our local historic list, the California Register of Historic Resources, and the National Register. Well, you might ask, and some people might ask, who cares if it's on a list or it's on a register? Well, it's important. It matters because Heritage Travelers, and I did bring into the City Hall four pages of one city's experience with the money that's generated by Heritage Travelers. Heritage Travelers refer to the list like the National Register, which is a very high goal to achieve. Our international or the Odd Fellows Hall building is on the National Register. The bridge, as it is, and hopefully as it will be changed, rehabilitated, will still be eligible for the National Register, the California Register, and the City Register. These folks come to the town like Arroyo Grande instead of another town because of our historic resources. So I'll very briefly mention five reasons I think rehabilitation, or five advantages of rehabilitation. I'm sure there are others. So the bridge and our other historic resources are enjoyed by visitors and residents alike who patronize local merchants such as, I'll name a few, Jeremy's Eclair Bakery, John and Maureen's Village Grill, Avon and Manuel's Gina's Restaurant, Ali and Wendy's Jaffa Mediterranean Restaurant, Verena's Kitchen Shop, The Guitar Store, Nolan's Bike Shop, Nolan's Irish Son, and antique shops, bars, restaurants, and so on. We are among very few cities of our size that have a downtown with mom-and-pop businesses almost exclusively. And that's why you get such good service, good food, and so on. These family-run businesses are under constant pressure from corporate-run businesses. They need all the help we can give them. They need all of our historic resources to remain in order to draw people off the 101. Second advantage. One of the comments on change.org was, if I owned a historic building in the village, I would not be allowed to remove it. The city should be held to the same restrictions it places on residents, end of quote. If the bridge is rehabbed, it will demonstrate that Arroyo Grande does not believe in a double standard, and I think that's important. Number three, surveys over the years have asked Arroyo Grande residents what they wanted to have happen to the village. Each time, and I think there have been three such polls over the last maybe 10 or 12 years, the overwhelming majority, high up in the 80 percentile, responded, keep the charm and character of the village. Rehabilitating the bridge will allow it to continue to contribute to the charm and character. A new concrete bridge will not. Number four, the National Register, IOOF Hall, the bridge, the Olihan Building on the corner, and the 1907 Bank of Arroyo Grande, which is where the guitar store is now, those buildings make up a historic streetscape that draws people to the businesses down Bridge Street. A new concrete bridge would interrupt that streetscape and possibly hurt the businesses south of the creek. Lastly, leaving the bridge in its current location at its current width or very close to that, I heard 26 feet mentioned, and that was rather encouraging, will calm traffic, making walking and biking and driving a little safer. So I say again, I hope that the council will vote tonight to keep the bridge project moving forward. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Other public comment?
Mark Pelletier. I live in Napomo, but both my wife and I have businesses in downtown. I didn't come here with any preconceived ideas of either or. But with the presentation, I see that we've risen to the minimum. We don't have 30 feet as an option. I don't understand why we don't have that as an option. That should be a question. historically, it sounds like maybe we've done risen to the minimum and we have historical bridge washouts, which is something to consider.
Thank you. Other comments?
Hi, my name is Polly Loomis Fitzgerald, and this is a petition, change.org, that was signed by over 1,500 people. And these are some of the comments that they wrote. Historical, beautiful, slows life down a bit, has tourist value, part of the local culture heritage. New and faster is certainly not always better. And I thought this was a great one. Bridge Street Bridge is a part of the history of Roy Grandy. It's unique and certainly worth saving. And this woman writes, her name is Helga, I have seen tourists from Europe and Japan in your town just to see the bridge.
Thank you. Other public comment?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, City Council. Randy Russom, 756 Myrtle Avenue, Myrtle Street, Rio Grande. I've had the honor of being called a stakeholder in this, represented the ARC and for the Planning Commission for another, I think it's 4 days. So, but I'm coming before you as just a citizen of Rio Grande. You've heard many discussions going around historical eligibility and engineering and economics. I think in the end, for me, it comes down to what this bridge really looks like, how it impacts the character of this community. I can't speak to what the value of historic registry is, although there are many here who would speak to what that does economically, bringing tourists to our area. I can say that this is not a 5-year decision or a 10-year decision that you're making here. So when we're looking at the economic impacts of this, the last bridge has lasted over 100 years. I would imagine we'll do at least that long on the next one. So when you're looking forward there, you need to be looking at what your grandkids are going to look at. When I look at it from walking my grandkids over that bridge. And I don't want to come back here, if that happens, luckily, if I have grandkids, in 5, 10, 15 years and go, darn, you know, we really should have saved that bridge. This is a little more important than that short-term view. I've been an advocate of 4B as an option, although Commissioner Brown and I might see eye to eye on some of the elements because I've advocated a one-way solution early on in the process. And while that's not included in any of the presentation here, I continue to think it's worth considering. It's a significant impact, I will agree. But and change, as you all know, is difficult, but it creates opportunity also. And when looked at a larger scale for village circulation, pedestrian opportunities, it may be an ideal way to go. We can see many examples, San Luis Obispo being one of them, of the positive impact of closing down a street, not the negative one. One of the things that I have not... I've just recently heard come forward as an answer was the ability to clear span with a supplemental truss. I know there were depth issues when you're looking at a truss structure. I haven't heard any results of looking at it as a, I guess they call it a box girder with concrete box system as another alternative to the truss. It seems to me that solution has really not been evaluated yet. with regard to the historical aspect of it, that we've had indications that it would have an impact, but we really don't know what that is. Although I don't think this issue prevents you from making a decision today, it was just something to continue, if you're going with 4B, to have that as one of the possibilities out there as a solution to 4B. With regard to going into the creek, and I'll grant you I'm far from being an engineer, although I am an architect and deal with the various jurisdictions and government entities on a regular basis, I would believe that anything we do, we're going to have the hydrologic studies. If we're clear spanning the creek, the old pilasters, I would imagine, would have to be removed, so you're going to have upstream and downstream studies in that case also. So that burden's already on us. Certainly, clear spanning versus putting a baluster in the middle of this would be the ideal case, I'm sure, in all those issues. The only other comment I might have is, while I certainly agree with the needs of our local businesses and this impact of closing down this bridge, this right now has been a many-year process and will continue for quite a while, and what it appears to come down to is a two-month difference in construction. I don't want to sound unsympathetic, but in the grand scheme of things, that's rather minor, and I hopefully that the businesses can be accommodated through efforts by the city to help them through that additional time, because in the end, having the right bridge in there is going to bring more traffic to them than having the wrong solution. I think that's all I have to offer for you guys today, but just to remind you that you're making a decision for my grandkids, yours, and families in the future. And while there was an argument to not pass along debt, there's a responsibility to pass along the valuable assets. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to comment on this item? Okay. Hearing none. We'll bring it back to the council for discussion. Jim, would you like to start?
Sure. Kind of in a left to right mode still. All right. Well, I guess I first wanted to remind everyone that we're not actually deciding tonight what the ultimate choice will be. We're choosing to go forward with two alternatives. And I do have to say, the first thing that struck me when I read this was the way we're going to spend over $500,000 on a study. Am I on here? Mm-hmm. People look like they can't hear me. Mm-hmm. On a study. And that's the first thing that got my attention. Is there any way that we could, you know, reasonably go forward and just make a choice tonight and say this is the way we're going to go? But I think when we look at this, the choice that we clearly hear from the public is for restoration, and yet I think that if we chose that as a single choice to go down, it also is the one with the highest risk of failure, that we would get to the end of it, as noted, and all of a sudden there would be some fatal flaw, and we would have to start over and go back to one of the other alternatives. So I do think clearly, fortunately, we have the choice, because I do think it would be a much more difficult choice to make that restoration choice on the risk that we would lose the whole thing and actually not be able to replace the bridge at all. I did actually want to ask one quick question, and that is on the study on the one-way issue. I'm assuming that the one-way alternative was studied as a traffic. And I just wanted to verify that and maybe get just a very short discussion, because we can talk about traffic all night. I know there's impacts in the immediate area, but there are also impacts outside of the immediate area of Bridge Street. I just wonder if we could just get a short discussion on that.
Certainly. I should note that option 4B really includes a few variations. So that will be continued to be studied along with 4B. So but we did look at that, and again it was we were looking at the one-way alternative ferociously there for a little while, because we didn't have a rehabilitation option earlier on that you know, we thought might be fundable. And so we were trying to reduce loads and reduce the traffic so we could try to address that. We did secure additional, we borrowed from future design funding, and we used it up front, and that's where option 4B was born, and we were able to find a two-way traffic solution in a rehabilitation option. So, but nonetheless, I'd like to stress that, yes, it is one of the variations. The one-way scenario is one of the variations in option 4B. And we've done some study on it, nothing super detailed, but enough to remind us of the difficulty of one-way streets in our cities. Yes, it would require a couplet, and it would certainly impact greatly the circulation in the village. Not that other changes wouldn't be able to be precipitated by it, where it would be a viable option. And it is not certain, it's not excluded at this time. It will be included in option 4B.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. So for me, I think option 4B is the obvious choice here on the one end. The restoration choice is obviously one that we want to pursue. And I think the real decision I to be is what would be the other choice. Staff is recommending option, well, I don't know whether it's staff or whether it's the stakeholder group, option 2 over option 3. I guess this is where maybe I have a slightly different opinion. I'm certainly open to hearing from my other council members on this. But it does strike me that option 3 is probably the better option here. And the reason for that is when we were shown the pictures, and this is where I'm working from memory is dangerous, but the pictures of the restored, where we took the actual steel, if you will, which is really all that's left of it, and restored them to make them the bigger box girders, any person who had seen this bridge before would walk down there and say, that's not the bridge. Whereas at least my impression is that in option 3 we would have something much closer, because we could build it much closer to what's existing, and so both of those clear the whole creek, handle a lot of those kinds of problems as far as the ease of and quickness of building and the cost, obviously, of building, and like I say, are very far less likely to have a fatal flaw. So I'm leaning toward the idea that option 3 would actually be the better choice. We would get something that was visually closer to what we have today than would reusing the steel is essentially what I see option 2 as. So that would be the direction I would like to see us go tonight. I'll just throw out my own little amateur engineering thought, and that is looking at carbon fiber as a way of reinforcing that the girder that goes underneath. Because it could still look the same, but at least my understanding that there's been quite a bit of work with carbon fiber in this application to provide a lot more strength out of a lot less steel. So those are my thoughts. I'm certainly open to hearing other thoughts on the option 2 versus option 3, but that's my direction at this point.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. So Teresa, option 3 that Jim's talking about, that is. There's no historic pieces left to that bridge at all, correct?
That's correct.
It's a reproduction. Okay. And then, Jim, what you're talking about in the option 2, so they're reusing the truss that's there, but they're setting it on a brand new bridge. And then tell me what you were talking about the girders up top. You're saying they're going to explain that one more time, because I was looking at this when you.
Well, maybe this is where I'm getting across up, but my understanding is they were going to reinforce the. Okay, then this must be my misunderstanding of it, because it seemed to make more sense the other way around. But
yeah, no. With alternative 2, it's the remaining truss is just a. Aesthetic element.
Yeah.
So
okay.
it doesn't have to carry any load. It doesn't do anything. We would go through the process of cleaning it, removing the lead paint, and that's one of the other alternatives. That with anything with the historic, we will be removing the lead paint and repainting the structure so that, again, future maintenance, you know, you have to go to a full containment when you paint these things. We're going to take all the lead off so that any future maintenance work, you don't have to deal with the lead paint and get into that full containment situation.
Okay, thank you for that. So I'm definitely in favor of moving forward. I'm a lot more favor in option 4B. I think that's what the community has come out and said from the get-go, but I know that we need to look at two options, and I'm okay with looking at that second option so we have our options open. I have seen other bridges where they've done this in other cities, where they take a brand new bridge and then they tack on the historic pieces that they took off of the old bridge. And I recognize it right away. You recognize this brand new concrete bridge, and then the other stuff is just there sort of tacked on to sort of fool the people that drive by that maybe that's an old bridge, but there's a definite difference. And I think it's important that we hold the city to as high a standard as we request of developers that come through that want to modify their historic properties. I think that's really important going forward. So I'm ready to move forward with those two options, and I really appreciate staff and the consultants' hard work on this. I was at one of the first stakeholder meetings a year or so ago, and we've come a long way since then because we've secured funds, probably, and that was a lot of hard work that was that went into that from the consultant. And I think Teresa really headed that up. And that's a big deal, and I think you really heard the public that came out to the stakeholders' meetings that this was important, and there was a ton of work that went into this. Just looking at the timeline and in the staff report, all the different meetings that you had, and you came back, and the consultant came back, it was an incredible amount of effort, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Harmon.
Yes, thank you. I, too, would like to commend Director McLeish and her staff for their true commitment to try to come up with a win-win situation moving forward. About a year ago, option 4B really wasn't even, it was on the table, and it was everybody's preferred option, but at that time, it was very unlikely that we were going to have any kind of funding resources to support that. So there was a lot of real digging to, if we weren't going to get the funding from Caltrans, did we really have a viable option, knowing that that was really the heart and soul of the direction people wanted to take. So I think it's tremendous that we now have this option, even though we might be at Caltrans becking regarding some of the things that we're able to do with it. I just thought that was important to bring that forward. I also very much support the two alternatives. I think it's very important that the two alternatives gives us a plan B going through the EIR process. If something falls out that's unexpected, then we're not going to be left with nothing and at a greater risk to lose the funding and then, you know, kind of go back to where we started from. I prefer option 2 over option 3, just because even though it might be a Lego snap-on version of the historic elements, at least those historic elements would still be retained, and I'm sure the designers would hear us very loudly about how to make it look as aesthetically close to what the bridge once was. And then likewise, I'd really support option 1, just kidding, option 4B for the second alternative to move forward with the EIR process. I would have to also support the two-lane option. Certainly, I'm glad that the one-lane option is still going to be involved in the process because it'll really help, so to speak, ferret out some of the questions that came up in today's discussion. So that's very positive to hear. I also think it's very important that we need to not have this bridge be obsolete and bring it up to load-bearing. And I would certainly support amending the consultant agreement to move forward with the two alternatives. Thank you.
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to follow up on something that Councilman Guthrie said and was talked about by the consultant, and it's mentioned by the city. But I was on Planning Commission for 7 years. I've been on City Council for a little while now. I know the CEQA process. I understand environmental documents pretty well. And what I haven't heard tonight and what I'm concerned about when I think about it is we keep talking about certain options falling out of the process. So what I can't figure out, and I think you brought up a really good point, is that we're spending this money when we really know which direction we want to go. So when we talk about this issue of falling out, I have a really hard time with that, because really what the CEQA document's going to do is tell us where we're deficient and what we need to do to fix it. It's not going to make it an impossibility. I don't see any outcome by a CEQA document that's going to tell us this is just not doable. It's not going to happen. That's not what happens when you do a CEQA document. So I'm really concerned about the tenor of conversation, that it's got to be two options because one might fall out, because quite honestly, that's just not true. That's not rational. It's not legal. It's not right. We can go forward with 4B tonight, and we can get the environmental document done and deal with whatever challenges come our way and save a lot of money. So I don't quite understand why we have to go through two options. It has not been explained to me from a legal standpoint or even from an engineering standpoint why we're going to go through a CEQA document that's somehow going to fail 4B. It's not going to happen. It isn't going to happen, period, end of story. It's not going to happen. So I'd like to hear from somebody about that before I make my further comments. Thank you, by the way.
Okay, Teresa.
Certainly. Councilmember Brown is correct that this environmental review process in and of itself will not drop out any options and will not limit your ability to choose the alternatives that are studied in those documents. It's simply, tonight we're simply elevating option 2 and option 4B, as at least as recommended, for that detailed study that really needs to be done to to clear it environmentally. And so, again, there will be, and as required, there will be other alternatives in those in the EIR. For example, there'll be a no-build option. You have to study it. There'll be some other options likely carried on from here, but those will be studied to a far less detailed amount. And since we did get approval for the funding to carry forward two alternatives as the project for the purposes of environmental study, staff is recommending to do that in order to get those both studied from an engineering standpoint and cleared environmentally.
Would we lose the funding if we went forward with one option?
No, we risk it a little bit if there's some impact unbeknownst to us with the one option that we're studying, and we'll have to backtrack, and it just will cost us time.
Time, but not money as much.
Time is money.
Well,
time so, in this case.
So is option 2 is more money than just. So it would seem to me that if you're, and correct me if I'm wrong, studying one option versus 2 has got to be somewhat cheaper.
Yes, it would be cheaper in terms of the studies, the technical studies would be cheaper because you're really evaluating one project to that greater level of detail.
And would they be substantially cheaper or just minimally cheaper?
Do you have an insight onto the cost differences?
Not exactly the cost differential between it. I guess one of the things, and maybe we didn't cover this, this project had been around for a while, and Caltrans had taken a position on this project years ago where they actually were recommending the replacement. So really, this started off as a replacement project, and it was only through the community outreach and things like that now we started bringing along this rehabilitation option. So if you were to look at it, probably our studies and everything that we're in under contract to do right now were more based on replacement option, where we're not doing the additional studies down in the creek and that. So in some ways, the work level that we've now brought on to look at the rehabilitation option, it's more than we had before. Because the studies are going to be more in depth in terms of.
So, in a lot of ways, your technical studies and information that you need to replace the bridge has already been done.
No, because, I mean, one of the first steps is really trying to gear towards what is the most likely alternatives. And
I'm trying to get a sense, as a layperson, I'm trying to get a sense about what's the cost savings and what's the possibility, because the whole community, for the most part, thanks in large part to a very small number of people that work very, very hard, have gotten us to 4B. And so why are we playing this government game that we've got to have two options if we don't have to? I don't mean that disrespectful. I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah. I think in part where it's come, and Teresa and her staff have been in these discussions as well with Caltrans, is that we're trying to document that we have covered the bases and that we understand the impacts of the different alternatives. Because we haven't gotten into, I mean, one of the things that we haven't thrown out here yet is that getting into detailed analysis of this trust, we still need to make sure we don't get to a point that impacts the historic eligibility. If we got there, then it's going to be pretty tough to justify the additional cost of that option.
Okay.
And so that's why we're trying to bring both along and keep those studies going.
Okay, that makes sense to me, actually. Thank you. Okay, so with that, I just want to say I'm fully in favor of 4B. I want to mention, I'm a big believer in debriefing and going backwards and kind of looking at things. And I want people to understand kind of what's happened here. And we really need to look at this. A lot of things when I was on planning commission or even in city council are like snowballs. Once they get a momentum, they just tend to roll and they tend to go. And that's where we were with the prior council. And three people that I'm aware of, Chuck Fellow, Shirley Gibson, and Minetta Bennett, were the big players in terms of saying, hey, wait a minute, let's be vigilant to what is important to the city of Arroyo Grande, and let's do something about it. And, you know, Minetta's older, she's got other things she could be working on, and she's put her energy and her effort on this. And Chuck Fellows is retired and has hobbies and interests, and he took time away from what he does to do this. Shirley, same thing. People that did change.org, people that understood websites and were passionate enough to say, this is worth doing. When I got on council, and the reason I got on council was, people said, why do you want to be on council? When I first ran, it's because there's nothing going on. There's no hot button issue. Why in the world would you be on council? It's for this very reason. You have to be vigilant. As we move forward, there's things that this community has to be vigilant about, and you've done that. Save the Bridge people have done that. Before that happened, we would have gone down a different road. There's no doubt in my mind. The prior mayor stopped in his tracks and said, hey, I hear you. Let's look at other options. Teresa, you said, okay, we'll dig into it, and you found ways where we weren't even thinking that way before that happened. And I sat on Chuck's porch one night, one afternoon, had a glass of wine. Thank God, Roy Grandy's not dry anymore. and the issue was, Chuck really said and explained to me that it's a few group of people that slow things down once in a while and say, let's take another look. And that's what we did, and look where we are now. So everybody that signed the petition, everybody that did the website, should be very proud of yourself, because that's what it takes. And Teresa, too, for using her expertise at looking for funding, because we as a council, we're headed down. We don't want to spend Arroyo Grande's money, just like that other gentleman said. We don't want to be paying the whole bill. And lo and behold, guess what? Look where we are now. It's likely that for the most part, it's all going to be funded. This should be a learning experience for all of us going forward on other items and other issues. So that's really what I want to describe. I'm so proud of this community and what they can do. The other thing I really want to talk about is, yes, 4B, I'll go with what other option is, because I just think it's a waste of time to study any other option, but I understand your point, given how Caltrans works and what we have to do. I get that. I'm for 4B all the way. I'm a little wondering about one way, just so I still think that circulation could be dealt with. But I'm more intrigued with what can the city do to help the business owners on Bridge Street because they are going to be financially distressed during this period. And whether it's the city holds events there, whether it's the city advertises on their behalf, knowing that it's going to affect them, I think the city owes them something extra because they're being affected while we're doing something that affects the entire community. But they're the ones that are going to bear the brunt in the short term of financial loss, possible financial loss. So I think the city needs to step up and be creative and figure out ways that we can let people know, yeah, it might be a little more difficult, but give these people the business they need so that they can survive during the period of construction. So those are my comments. And again, I want to reiterate Kristen Barnage's comments. The city, in every instance, should hold themselves to the same standard as we hold anybody else. And that's what this is all about. So those are my comments.
Okay, thank you. I also support the 4B option, and I want to thank everyone. I want to thank the staff for bringing the various options that need to be studied as part of this process forward. I want to thank the community for their interest. This is something that clearly impacts the whole character of the community, and that is so important here that I tend to agree with Councilman Brown's position that it would seem that perhaps some savings could be achieved by studying just the one option, which is clearly the favored option. I do have a question, since what we're talking about is going forward with an environmental review, and it seems that two of the significant potential questions relate to activity in the creek and the potential for a clear span vice work that would actually happen in the creek, and I think those would be significantly different environmental concerns going forward. So I guess what I'd like to see is the option 4B go forward, and then one of the studies that would include the free span, such that, you know, the major environmental impacts either direction were included in that in those studies.
So option two does consider that free span, so I think that would still serve that purpose well.
So in that case, while favoring the option 4B, I would agree with staff's recommendation to study both 4B and option two. So those are my comments.
Could I ask an additional question of the consultant? But it looks like you want to say something anyway. But
Just wanted to add one more thing. Getting back to carrying forward the two options, in our discussions with Caltrans when we approached them about this concept, a big part of why they were in support of it is they'd just recently come off another project that was up in Northern California. I think it was the city of Healdsburg, where they had gone down a path. They picked a preferred alternative going into the environmental phase and just focused on that. And then when they got down to the approval of the environmental document, that's when the community came out and basically said, no, we don't want that, and sent them all the way reeling back. And so Caltrans actually thought that what Teresa and her staff were doing here in this situation, where you're trying to kind of work forward and make sure that you don't have to back up and fall back, they saw that as a cost savings, actually, because there's that eliminating some of the risk. And so what they looked at was that they had a design team that took this thing to, you know, full environmental document, but then got sent all the way back to the beginning.
But not based on technical issues, based on public comment or public sentiment.
It was a little of both in that particular situation. But
sorry, Jim.
Okay. My question actually sort of related to that.
Yeah.
It seems like the key stumbling point, if you will, of option 4B is the supplemental trust and how deep it would how deep it could be, and one, meet the historic registration requirements, but also still meet this, I'm going to call it the mean high water line, but
right.
you know the
right.
the high water
keep
mark.
Out of the water, yeah.
And it does seem to me that it's not absolutely clear that that's doable. I think there might be a technical.
In terms of the analysis we've done to date, is that and you kind of saw it in the figure we showed, we're getting very close to the depth if we keep that similar span length. If you try and clear span that, then that would potentially get deeper, and then we would be down impacting the water surface, the flood water.
So the technical problem is only if we were to try to clear span, not if we were to use the
correct.
Current.
Correct. We've done preliminary sizing and produced load rating to Caltrans that they've approved for the funding, given where we're at. And so we can go down to that flood surface elevation. If we drop down below, that's going to have other impacts that then may kick us out, not kick us out, but cause impacts that would be significant to that alternative.
All right, thanks.
Other questions? Do we have a motion to move forward?
I can try to entertain a motion on this. I would move to select option 2, the salvage and relocate truss on new bridge, and option 4B, replace existing supplemental truss with new supplemental truss to proceed for environmental study for the Bridge Street Bridge Improvement Project. And can I do them all together, or do I have to do them separate?
You can try to do them together and see where it goes.
All right. I'm going for it. Okay.
Go, girl.
And then authorize the mayor to execute amendment number 2 to the consultant services agreement with Quincy Engineering, and then appropriate an additional $563,500 of the local highway bridge program grant funds in the capital improvement program budget for the preliminary engineering phase of the project.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we proceed essentially with the staff recommendation. Thank you for making that long motion. Nicely done. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Herman?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes. Okay, item 12 is council reports. I attended the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting. This was this past Wednesday. And the issue of the lawsuit that's being carried on, which is now the Sanitation District versus the State Water Board and the Regional Water Quality Control Board, it is ongoing. The board has, the board being the Sanitation District Board, has voted to seek a settlement with the state in that lawsuit. That is proceeding very slowly. Hopefully it will get us to a settlement conference before tremendous additional legal fees are engaged. So I'm hopeful on that part. I'm a little bit discouraged, frankly, with the pace of the settlement efforts, but I am confident that with the unanimous vote of the board that an agreement can be reached with the state, or at least we can enter into discussions with the State Water Board and the Regional Water Quality Control Board. And that would be regarding mediation of the fine that was imposed after the 2010 spill. Other legal proceedings are ongoing to try to recover costs of the litigation, which are now in excess of $800,000, which is an amount that weighs heavily on the board members. And there is a potential for recovering those legal fees, but that is the subject of a second litigation. That litigation is proceeding on a contingency fee basis so that if there was a recovery, there's no upfront cost to the district to pursue that. It would be funded by contingency. So those are the major issues. The plant is operating very well. Superintendent Clemens has done a great job of with the staff there of bringing the plant back into operation in the manner that it's supposed to be operated and in compliance with the requirements for that plant. So further things that are being discussed include additional treatment capacity and the potential for recycled water use. So those are some of the ongoing things at the sanitation district. Second item is the Briscoe Halcyon Interchange Subcommittee. Councilmember Guthrie and I attended that just this past week, I guess it was. And I think we developed a bit of a more conciliatory approach with that, and we're looking at two options that are basically coming down to proceed in that with the design phases there and the possibility to move forward with that. So we're looking eventually, probably within 6 months or so, to have public meetings and so forth on that to gain input on what the potentially viable options are. And Councilman Guthrie will probably have more to say on that.
Could I interrupt you for just a minute? At some point when you come forward with that public discussion, can you have a discussion about the different funding for the different options so the public knows what the cost is?
Certainly, yes. There are cost differences between the various options.
Thank you.
Other items, Oversight Board, Joint Powers have not met, so I have no report on those. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you. Zone 3 met, and Lopez Lake is at 20,109 acre feet. It's about 41% full. We are not, you know, we had some rain, but we're still obviously really in a state of drought, and we're hoping for some more rain soon. The Homeless Services Oversight Council met, and as you probably, if you read the Tribune, you saw in the paper that on the 26th they had the point-in-time count. The whole county gets together and they count the homeless people in all the cities, and they actually have former homeless people help them by taking them to the areas where the homeless are. And so that happened. We don't have any numbers back yet, but we have to do that every 2 years, the county does, in order to receive grant funding from HUD. It's required. And just to sort of bring home how important that funding is, 2 years ago when they did the PIC count, they found out that San Luis Obispo County had one of the highest rate of homeless veterans. And so we received $6 million in funding because of that count. So it's really important, and so we'll get the results of that soon. And the county's 50 Now campaign, where they are identifying the 50 most vulnerable homeless people and housing them. 18 have been housed. It's really, really a successful program. And as you probably know, the city, all the cities took part in a campaign, Welcome Home Baskets, and there were buckets in different areas throughout the county to collect these kits to give to these vulnerably homeless people that were housed. And I'm proud to say that Arroyo Grande was the big winner, and we collected by far the most items. So AG really stepped up. The lady that collected the items from AG said she filled her car 5 times coming down here. So I really appreciate it. I had posted on Facebook, and I think a lot of people saw it on the at the meeting, and so I really appreciate everybody giving back it was really successful. And I think that's it. Thank you.
Councilmember Guthrie. Sure.
I'll start with SLOCOG. The Regional Transportation Improvement Plan, RTIP, as everybody likes to call it, is being worked on. Probably will come to a final decision. This is, can't remember, was a 5 or a 10-year plan, but basically prioritizes what will be the improvements that we put in the next 10 years, and also has what I'll call a general look at here's the problem and here's the funding and what kind of solution can we accomplish. Something that people may want to take a look at least read the executive summary of it online. It is a rather lengthy document, but an important document for what's going on in our area. In addition, we did vote to push forward some environmental studies to try to get several projects here in the South County, mostly having to do with up in what they call the Shell Beach Straits area. I think most of us know when you hit the Spyglass exit there that things slow down quite a bit, and it's looking at some auxiliary lanes and moving some on-ramps and some things in that area and speeding up that environmental review process so that we can get into the next funding cycle. Otherwise, you end up 2 more years down the road. So pretty important for us in the South County here in general. But actually, most of the time was spent on a discussion. There's a desire to improve the rail service between San Luis Obispo and San Francisco, ultimately. But the first R piece of it is between San Luis Obispo and Salinas. And then Monterey County is working on Salinas to San Jose to get you into the commuter trains up there. And that's actually where most of the discussion was regarding the environmental document, named some possible track improvements that would require right-of-way and eminent domain and those kinds of issues. And there was some very heated discussion about that. And ultimately, even though there's almost no chance that anybody would ever fund these pieces of the railroad project, they were still included in the environmental study and therefore was felt that they clouded the title to these properties. And so we did direct staff to go back and go ahead and take those out. There was going to be some discussion on whether the railroads would allow us to take them out because they wanted them included, because the state in one of their things says you have to study every possibility. But I do think we're going to be able to do that in order to clear that up for those folks who had those properties up there. Going on to South County Transit, I think the really key thing people should be aware of is that we're considering a fare increase. It's been in the works for a little while, the 25-cent, which is also a 25% fare increase. We're looking at that. They're going to do the public outreach in April. Their initial look says that it'll probably work out okay, but the workshops are an opportunity for the public to really have input is going to come up in April with a decision in June or July about moving forward with a rate increase. They did run a practice run for an alternative, I'll call it a commuter. It only run in the morning and in the evening to connect basically Oceano and Grover Beach to the northern ends of Pismo Beach, but it also would come across here and hit the Walmart shopping center and connect those two areas as well. And it all we really tested there was that the route works. We did get tremendous ridership from the grandmother's park. I think sort of turned it into an outing. And actually, I think 3/4 of the ridership was that. But it was a one-time shot. It was where they just went out and ran it once to really make sure that it was workable and got pretty good ridership. And one of the key things to me was they did outreach to the businesses, particularly hotels up there where the Spyglass is and the cliffs and those hotels, and got good response from the potential riders, from the housekeepers and the line people who are actually likely potential riders, and got good response for them on what they needed to make the bus service work for them. So that I think that was one of the best outcomes of that. Moving on to JPIA, I have no report on that. And I'll just real quickly on the Briscoe, that's a good report. I think the real key decision there was this roundabout versus signal. And Caltrans just has a major problem with the signal. And I think that we, we could have waited another month and met again, but I think we came to the decision that if it's that big a problem, let's just move on with the two viable alternatives rather than battle over what was really a very technical item. So I think we have moved that process forward quite a bit with that decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Integrated Waste did not meet in January. That's their typical process, is to cancel the January meeting. And EVC meets tomorrow, so I don't have anything else to report.
Councilmember Harmon.
Yes, for the County Water Resources Advisory Committee, fondly known as the RAC, two main items presented at the January 7th meeting involved chapters from the resource summary report of the resource management system, known as the RMS, pertaining to water supply, water systems, and wastewater systems. This resource report is one of the key parts of the resource management system, which is described in Framework for Planning, Part 1 of the Land Use Element of the County General Plan. The system provides information to guide decisions about balancing land development with the resources necessary to sustain such developments. An ad hoc committee was created to review and give feedback to county planning by February 6th. The one important note from this report contained a recommendation to add the Atascadero subbasin to a level of severity of 3. And of course, planning would have to move forward, and county would have to ultimately decide on that distinction. The second item was a presentation on a county implementation strategy on the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. The Air Pollution Control District, I'll be attending my first meeting tomorrow. Agenda items include proposed changes to the National Ambient Air Quality Standard for ozone, results of the 2014 APCD Public Opinion Survey, and then a consideration of an MOU with the State Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources regarding oil well stimulation reporting that is now required pursuant to Senate Bill 4. Lastly, the Five Cities Fire Authority met on January 23rd. The authority is going to proceed with an application for a SAFER grant. The grant process opens February 9th. It closes March 6th. And the authority will be seeking grant funding for 3 engineer positions. Also, the authority board supported pursuing the creation of a 501c entitled Friends of the Five Cities Fire Authority, and set additional priorities for the upcoming year. And that's the conclusion of my report.
Council Communications,
I just wanted to entertain the idea of agendizing the Northern Chumash Tribal Council's proposal to come before council, and they're asking for a letter of support to submit to the Board of Supervisors. Mm-hmm. So are we okay with putting that on the agenda to come for us to take a look at? Okay. Is that okay, Bob, for a future?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that. And then I know that we're working on the budget, and I just wanted to, I know there will be some things we're looking at, some changes, and I just want to sort of put a plug in for Public Works. I feel like they're pretty short-staffed with what they have to do. They have 2.5 employees to care for all the parks and all the street trees, and I know they have 2 employees that take care of SOTO exclusively, so this is separate than that. And if you really look at a list of all the parks that our Public Works maintains and all of our street trees, I mean, I cannot believe how good our city looks with 2.5 employees. It's just, it's incredible. So I think it's high time that they get some extra help. I'm not saying other Parks and Rec and other areas don't, but I'd like to just see that come forward with them. And I know Jeff's sort of developing some ideas to bring forward. Thank you.
I do have one, and this one is really for the public. I received in the mail, it's entitled East Cherry Avenue Neighborhood Meeting, and it is involving the East Cherry Avenue specific plan. There is a meeting this Saturday, January 31st, from 10 a.m. to noon. The meeting location is described in the tent at 490 East Cherry Avenue in Aurora Grandy. And it is specific proposals and the permitting process will be presented by Magano Homes Incorporated and the Aurora Grandy Valley Japanese Welfare Association with assistance from their representatives. And they will be available for questions and comment. Morning refreshments will be served. And they would appreciate an RSVP, and that would be at CM Florence, AICP, phone number 541-4509.
Do you know if that got posted anywhere or how it's getting out?
I received it in the mail from Oasis Associates.
Can you repeat the phone number?
Certainly. It's 541-4509, and that is Oasis Associates Incorporated.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Councilmember Brown.
I have nothing to add. Thank you.
Okay. I've been contacted by Fiona Ma, who is our new State Board of Equalization representative. And her staff will be coming down to the area to interact with business owners to help with comments and questions relating to sales taxes and business taxes. So look forward to that. I believe they're going to entertain having meetings and possibly even training programs. So that should be a positive support for the business community from the BOE. Are there any staff communications?
Mr. Mayor, the staff has no communications this evening.
Okay. Are there any public comments before we adjourn to closed session?
Hi, Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande. Ms. Barnett, you mentioned that the water level out at Lopez is now at 41%. And I know the drought, they're now anticipating we're going into year four with the drought. So I'd like to see how we could get it on an agenda or something to bring back up what our drought standards are at this point, and how do we think we have enough water to make it through this year at this point. I know at some point they had talked about it, and when it got to an emergency level, I'd just like to hear more about it, because that's a startling figure, and I think that's the lowest Lopez has ever been at, if I've done my homework right. So thank you.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, Ms. Welsh has a good point. In fact, staff is working on a report to come back, as this will invoke other standards that the community would need to be addressing. So we're actually updating our publication right now, looking at the implications of the current drought, and we'll be providing a report with recommendations shortly to council.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I knew you were working on something along those lines. But thank you. Is there any comment on the closed session tonight? Hearing none. Council, will you tell us about the closed session, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. We'll now be adjourning to closed session per agenda item 17 to consider potential litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9D2 arising out of Steve Adams Employment Agreement.
Just to be clear, the public needs to know that we're probably not going to report out tonight. Is that correct?
No, we will be reporting out if there's anything to report.
Yes.
That's not the way agenda reads. It reads that we'll report out at the next session. At least the way I read it.
Item 18 says that we reconvene to open session and make comments, so I think we'll have an opportunity to do that.
No, it also says it'll be repeated at the next, next meeting, so we'll do it at both times.
Okay, with that, we'll move to closed session. Okay, we are returning from the closed session, and I'll ask the staff to report the result, please.
Mr. Mayor, the council voted 5-0, motion by Councilmember Guthrie, second by Councilmember Barnich, to settle potential litigation arising out of Steve Adams' employment agreement. The city will make a lump sum payment equal to 4 months of salary and benefits as defined in the employment agreement, in the total amount of $71,073. That's the announcement, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. The council would like to make some brief comments on the settlement authorization. First, the council heard and considered the comments made throughout the past months from members of the public. We appreciate that people of various different opinions came and offered their thoughts and concerns. We took that into closed session in the deliberation process, and along with the totality of the circumstances, which included previous actions, matters of law that we have to consider, contract requirements and so forth, and Mr. Adams' previous service to the community, I think we came to a carefully considered solution based on all these facts and what we thought was in the best overall interest of the community, the employees, and the city going forward. There's lessons to be learned from this, of course. City policies are going to be reviewed. Some of them will be changed or perhaps created. But it's time now to move forward with the exciting things that are going on here, the business of the city. The council and I again thank you, all the members of the public, and we request that now you join us in looking forward to the future of Arroyo Grande and helping us shape that future. Thank you very much.
Can I ask a question?
I can answer a question after the meeting. Is that that's the business on the agenda tonight? Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
It wasn't important enough to leave a message, so maybe I don't need to call.
So
that.
Maybe
I do. I do have the new.